Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 24th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140, and our participant code is 385698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab. You can find it on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to start off with the reading of some scriptures like we do every Monday night. And tonight I'm just going to read three pieces of scripture and just kind of read it straight on through, comparing scriptures to scriptures. It's Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 18. Colossians chapter 1, verses 12 through 17. And Colossians chapter 2, verses 13 through 15. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with the truth, having the breastplates of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye might be able to, wherein ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayers and supplications in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all preservation and supplication for all saints. Give thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers in the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness, and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature, in whom we have redemption through his blood. Okay, this looks like a repeating of this verse, but anyway, who is the image of the invisible God and the firstborn of every creature, for by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in the earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And you being dead in your sins, and the uncircumcised of the flesh, hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to the cross. And having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. Okay, again, that was Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 18, Colossians chapter 1, verses 12 through 17, Colossians chapter 2, verses 13 through 15. Okay, let's see where we go here. Tonight's topic, I guess we'll get right into it. You know, a couple of weeks back, we talked about a new direction. We talked about we're going to be writing some papers, and we've been working on it. Kind of a difficult paper to work on because it's something I don't know that it's ever been done before. But certainly all of the processes are there in order for us to exercise these rights, unalienable rights of we, the people, to take control of our nation, to take control of our direction in the future, require and enforce that our elected servants obey the law of the land, or leave office. You know, we almost took this direction a while ago, but we were held off by a few other things. We thought that maybe what was going on out west might be something that we might be able to get more involved in than what we have been. But it didn't work out as in that way that we had planned. But certainly through that process, we've learned. Every week we learn more. We come to a better understanding of the processes that have been set up. We come to a better understanding of common law and the procedures in the court. And so we're constantly learning, constantly building. And I feel pretty confident at this point in time it's the time to make a move. And two or three weeks ago, we mentioned this new direction. I'm going to share a paper tonight. It's the beginning of what we're writing. It's only a small section of what we are writing. And it will be the grand jury, which is we the people, against the U.S. House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, state governors, and federal judiciary. Now, we've sent papers into the courts over the past year, and a few months, or maybe just about a year now. And, you know, they've gone in, but they haven't come back. These people had a duty to speak and talk about it. They have not. I'm not going to guess on why. I'm sure there's certain different reasons for different people. And I'm sure there's a lot of stress on our elected individuals that are in Congress and in other places, maybe as governor or even in the courts, that they find it very difficult to really say anything. But I'm certain that there are quite a few people out there that still would like to see a major change, and we, I believe, will represent that major change back to our roots, back to where we belong. And so we're going in for a redress of grievances. Now, this has been done in the past by a few people, actually only two that I'm aware of. I'm sure other people have done this, but I'm aware of two cases. I'm aware of Robert Schultz, where he went into the Supreme Court and asked the question, do we have the right of redress of grievances? And that, I think, is where the problem began. He asked the question. We're not asking anybody any questions. We have the right of redress of grievances, and we're going to exercise it. Our focus, of course, will be on mainly the two branches of government. The administrative system, I believe, is really totally out of control, totally in control by the New World Order. I don't perceive by addressing them with anything at this point in time will do anything. But we need to go and address the people where we may have a chance. You know, we have 430 people in Congress as representatives. We have 100 senators, U.S. senators. And so that's 530 people there. And out of those 530 people, we got to believe that there are some that understand the problem. And we'll see what we're doing. We've already sent papers to all these people. We didn't necessarily expect a response. It was really more of a demand or a command to obey the Constitution. And we've also done it in a way that was done as an information. We're doing something different here. We're going to go after this with a summons and require an answer. With that in mind, we're not going to go after all 440 representatives plus the 530. That would be overwhelming. And I think they need to get together and think about this and respond as one. So we're going to go after the Speaker of the House as a name in this as far as the name is going to be on this paperwork, and the head of the Senate and all 50 governors. We're not sure on whether we're going to go into the judiciary and go to all 94 federal district courts or just go right directly to, which I think is where we're leaning, the Supreme Court of the United States. We have the eight justices. I know Scalia, I understand, has not been replaced yet. So there are eight justices there. The chief judge, I believe, is Roberts. So we'll directly focus our attention to him, and he would, of course, have to answer not only for himself, but for all eight justices. And we're also going to demand that the United States Supreme Court write a writ of mandamus, demanding and commanding that the federal judiciary obey the law of the land to allow the Constitution to return back into our courts. You know, people speak about the courts and they speak about jurisdiction and so on and so forth, and they say we're at sea, you know, we're under this jurisdiction or that jurisdiction, and we're under the law of the sea. I have no idea what jurisdiction that we're in, and I don't think they do either. I think jurisdiction, as I heard it mentioned by an individual some years back, seems to change in the as the conversation moves in a federal court. But they never really ever do get to the place where they are commanded to be, and that is under the common law. Jurisdictions under the law of the land. And that is the point. We are going into the courts in jurisdictions unknown. Every time people get into the courts, we have no clue on really what jurisdiction we're in. We just don't know. We can think we know. We could look at history, see some of the writings that they've done concerning certain acts or different things that the Congress has written, and guess here or guess there. But we are indeed in jurisdictions unknown. We're going to take a court and bring it right back to where it belongs, an Article III court under the common law. And we're going to use the rules of the court to bring us there. The rules of the court are still there in order to bring us there. We're going to use the Constitution also to bring us there. And we're going to demand them their obedience and their response. And they have a duty to speak. And we're going to require them to speak. Now, how we're going to do all those things and how we're going to write this up and so on, that's going to be revealed as time goes on. Tonight is the first revealing of the first part of what we're going to be talking about. And we start off with a proclamation going into the courts. And, you know, the word proclamation in itself is an announcement or a declaration. It's a decree, ultimately, also. So we really want to declare and make a decree at the same time of the purpose and what it is we're doing, and set the record straight on what has been going on in our nation for the past, well, actually 200 years. The enemy was in the gates from day one. We know that clearly just by looking at, and we're going to talk a little bit about this tonight, just by looking at what Jefferson and Franklin put forward as the seal, the United States seal, and what it ended up being, and what took place there. We're going to touch on that a little tonight, but we're not going to get into very deep specifics. But I would presume that this original paperwork that we're going to be filing in, we're going to read, we only got 8 pages done, and we got a lot of notes and different things on other pages we're planning on doing and putting together into this and setting the stage, and then pulling all of the paperwork, all of the information, all of the writ of mandamuses that we have put in the past year, which is about, 17 or so, 18 papers. We're going to pull them into this court case. We're also going to pull into this court case, Judge Anna Brown, I believe her name is, out there in Oregon in the case concerning the wildlife situation. And this is a perfect case in order to lay out the fact that the judiciary works overtime to remove the Constitution, to not permit the Constitution to be spoken or brought up in our courts. We also have the case out there in Montana, which we're going to pull in here. There's a very important case or situation that's gone on and is going on out in Jersey. We want to deal with people and put people on the spot. We want an answer. We want to know by what authority they think they can speak the way they do, and how they think that they can put people into jeopardy, lives into jeopardy by the things that they say. And we're talking
Lost you, John.
I thought it was just me. Let me see if I can raise him on Skype. And cell phone. I guess he wasn't kidding when he said his computer went down just before he called in tonight.
Maybe it went down again.
Yep, apparently it did.
Maybe somebody helped it along.
I would not be a bit surprised. I see, Gerard, you're on the call now. I don't know.
Can you hear me?
I hear you,
Gerard.
Yeah, I just got logged in. I was having some trouble with my Skype.
Yeah, John, yeah, we lost John.
Yeah.
Why don't you take over then, Gerard?
He was talking about the paper that we're going to file, which is basically a proclamation, and I kind of missed the beginning of what he said, but I know I'll just shoot from the hip of what I know. You know, what's different is that we're actually taking a number this time, so they can't ignore us. They have to answer somehow. And therein is, you know, their problem. That's going to be a problem for them because they don't like to answer. And we're pretty good counterpunchers when it comes to that. You know, one of the reasons they don't answer is because they can't answer. Because they can't answer these things where they're violating our fundamental rights. And the only way that they can answer is by saying, like Judge Anna did, there's no constitution in here. Well, are they going to say that in a court case that's accusing them of being outside the Constitution? They're definitely not ready for that yet. They're close, but they're not ready. They don't have the control that they would like to have, and so therefore they still got to play games. And so now what we're doing is we're actually coming in and drawing that line in the sand and saying, okay, you know, we've been writing to you. We've been giving you these mandamuses and coruantos. So now this is a case with a summons, and it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with that. So that's basically where we're at. And I mean, the paper that he's put in is pretty inclusive of everything that's going on, and it lays out those principles. Now, I don't know if he was going to, was he going to read that tonight, John?
Or he was going to read the first 8 pages.
I mean, I guess I could do that, although I'm not sure. Let me see if I have that on this computer.
He says he's rebooting and he should be back on shortly. So
okay.
If you want to ad lib and wait,
should I steal his thunder? No, I'll wait for him.
Whatever.
Oh, come on, let me read it.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Have a go at it.
Yeah,
no verdict.
Well, you know,
no verdict today, Gerard.
What's that?
No verdict today.
Yeah, no verdict. Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but we'll find out, I guess.
I think it's good.
Yeah, well, you know, the government tried to make this case way more complicated than it needed to be, and they got everybody.
Well, it would have been a slam dunk. If they were all for the government, it would have been a slam dunk, and they'd have had their answer today, is my feeling.
Yeah, I don't know what instructions she gave them too when they went in. Was anybody there to hear the instructions when they went in, or
oh,
did
yeah.
she not instruct them after that?
Before the jury took over, they were instructed definitely.
Yeah, I know she gave them instructions in the beginning, but I'm sure she gave them last minute instructions when they went in to deliberate.
Yeah, she did. She did.
Yeah, and that was probably treasonous instructions too. I mean, just knowing what I know about the federal courts and what they claim, you know.
Well, she wasn't allowing the Constitution in her court.
Yeah, she said that how many times about? She must have said that
several times anyway.
Yeah, 56, 70 times. Which
the
is
attorneys
a good thing.
Make sure of it.
Yeah. Well, actually, she did more to hang herself, this judge. She really showed that she was biased, and she showed that she was trying the case, and there was plenty of incidences in there where she was clearly outside of her authority to do what she was doing. You know,
she was even sustaining objections that hadn't been made.
Right. And the other thing was, is she told, when Ammon objected, she said, be quiet, you'll get your turn. Well, there's no turn for objection. You have to object at the time that it happens. Hello? And if you don't, you missed your turn. I mean, any one of these things is enough to sort of, like, damn her from the case, you know? I don't know if you saw the paper that Mr. Dan Bailey wrote, but it was pretty inclusive, and it had all that stuff in it. It was great.
I hadn't seen that one yet.
Oh, well, it's certainly worth reading, and I told John about it, and we're going to pick it up and post it, because I think it needs to be made part of this case, too, that he's putting in, because we've got everything in there, and this,
no, no
this
doubt.
Is,
no.
this is filed on Shauna Cox's behalf. You know, it's actually like she's filing the paper. And I'll tell you what, it's a good read because he brought everything in that was said. It's pretty good, you know. And I mean, this isn't even look at everything didn't even come out yet. I mean, the whole
just
analysis.
Just mention I'm back in here.
Well, it's about time. I was going to steal your thunder and read your paper, but they told me not to. So let's see. Where were you when you took off?
I know I was talking about Jersey. I don't think you heard about Jersey. That case out there.
Right.
We're going to pull into this, and there's a lot of other things. What I want to do is get to the paper in case I, you know, crash again. I'm doing like it's like a memory dump, so. Hopefully we'll be able to get through the paper, and maybe I'll be able to stay on the rest of the night. We'll see how it goes. In any event, if I disappear, just pick up again and pick up wherever you can take it. So, okay, here we go. I'm going to go straight to the case, and here's the bottom line. We're doing something very different. Again, this is going to be one case that's going to it's going to be dealing with one thing, subversion against we the people, subversion against the United States of America by enemies, both domestic and foreign. And we're going to do it in a court case up here in New York. We're going to do up in the Albany, which I think is called the Northern District. And matter of fact, it is the Northern District. It's going to be Albany, New York. And we're going to be pulling people in from around the nation, particularly people who are elected or appointed individuals that have a job to do and are not doing their job. And again, we're going to go in and pay the $400 extortion. We'll try to get through without paying it, but if they want it, we'll give it to them. One of the first things we're going to do is go after them for extortion. We're going to go right after the clerk. If we explain to the clerk the law and they still want it, then fine. We'll give them the $400. We'll have the extortion papers ready at that point to file at the same time. And we'll get our paper stamped for summons, to file the summons, and get that case going and get a number and get on the money back and make sure they understand the jurisdiction we're in. And again, going through the rules of the court, we're going to use their rules against them. And there is rules for changing jurisdictions and laying out the jurisdiction you're coming in at. And so we're going to take that form. We're going to move that into the court. We're going to move into the jurisdiction under common law. And we're going to call this an action at law. But here it is. It's going to be a proclamation that is going to start off with. But again, this is only about 8 pages of the whole paper. We've got a lot more than this to talk about and to share. But the proclamation is probably going to be the first part of this whole thing. And so that's the paper we will work. We're going to read right now and talk about. Now, again, we're going in for a redress of grievances. Okay, and that is the key thing. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to redress. And going in, you know, the word redress in itself, okay, is really to restore. And that's what we're looking to do, to come in and to restore, to bring back to where it should be. And we want to restore, we're coming in, of course, for grievances, complaints, our objections, you know, what they're doing. So we want to restore things back to law and order, the law of the land. And I think I mentioned the word proclamation is a decree. And really, it's really laying out, it's a public statement in this case to the legislative branch and to the judiciary branch, laying out the history, the real history, what's been taking place. And here it is. Okay, let's start off with proclamation. Oh, to get this paper, you can follow along. We did file this 8-page up online. You can go under grand jury on the blue strip on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, far right side, grand jury. Click on grand jury right before the NLA store. And scroll down. It is the first case where they were filing in the United States District Courts for the Northern District of New York. Now, we did put an information in concerning martial law. But it didn't require return, and we didn't get a number. We're going to deal with that in this case also. But redress of grievances is what this paper is being called for right now. Again, the redress of grievances is going to be probably about 25 to 30 pages. I really don't know. We're working on it. But right now we have 8 pages completed and ready to go as far as be able to read and share this. So here it is, redress of grievances, proclamation. The jurisdiction is the court of record under the rules of the common law. This is an action at law, and it is the grand jury representing we the people against the U.S. House representatives, the U.S. Senate, we'll get names in here, state governors, federal judiciary, and these are the respondents. We the sovereign people in this extraordinary action at law to redress. Hang on 1 second. Let me just get to the... I don't think I'm on the page here to make sure my mic is working. I'm coming through here, aren't I? Coming through
right.
Clear?
Yeah, okay. You're good.
I thought I was on here before. Okay, here we are. Anyway, I can see my mic moving, so I can know if I'm off. Okay, we the sovereign people in this extraordinary action at law to redress our grievances, indict the lawless, restore the republic, by exposing the subversion of the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic, and by the power and authority vested in we, the sovereign people of nature's by nature's God, we will hold liable and bring to justice in courts of justice all who oppose the law of the land. In 1775, colonial militia men, also known as we the sovereign people, took up arms against the British troops of the tyrant King George for subversion of the unalienable rights of we the sovereign people. On July 4, 1776, we the sovereign people, in a declaration of independence, dissolved the political bands with Britain, declaring, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations in which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitles them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. In this declaration, we the sovereign people laid the foundation of our Constitution, calling upon our Creator, acknowledging the covenant with God by establishing the law of the land, that is the common law that the Bill of Rights expresses. The acknowledgments of this covenant with God under His law was made clear by a committee of three, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, that were chosen to author our founding document, the Declaration of Independence in 1776. This same committee of three were again chosen by the Continental Congress to work on and submit a national seal designed for approval. Jefferson, in the representation of the law of the land and our structure of government, designed an illustration of the Israelites' exodus out of slavery and bondage from Egypt. Benjamin Franklin had an idea similar to Jefferson and wanted to also illustrate a scene from the Exodus of the Israelites. The seal would show Moses parting the Red Sea, with Pharaoh and his chariots being overwhelmed by the water, with the motto, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." Thomas Jefferson became so enamored with this motto, he incorporated it into his own personal seal design. In 1782, Congress rejected the Jefferson and Franklin designs and instead adopted a two-sided seal designed by Charles Thompson. His seal gave allegiance to a secret society that symbolically made the point within the seal that there was already a conspiracy to supplant the law of the land with the civil law of man under a new world order. Franklin was not happy with the eagle, as he explained in a letter to his daughter, "For my own part, I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen as the representative of our country. He is a bird of bad moral character. He does not get his living honestly. You may have seen him perched on some dead tree near the river, where too lazy to fish for himself, he watches the labor of fish hawks. And when that diligent bird has at length taken a fish, the bald eagle pursues him and takes it from him." In 1789, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, did ordain and establish the Constitution for the United States of America. In 1791, we, the people of the United States, expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction of or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution, resolving that this Bill of Rights to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. The Bill of Rights, thereby being the capstone of our Constitution, laid the foundation of our unalienable rights by which all law is measured, in that all law repugnant to it are null and void. Marbury versus Madison. Therefore, by we the people calling upon God in 1776, desiring the righteousness of his law, seeking the blessings of his liberty in 1789, and proclaiming his unalienable rights in 1791, entered into an everlasting covenant with him that no man can depose. Now, being his children through adoption, to whom pertaineth the government, the covenant, the law, and the promises, he put his laws into our minds and wrote them in our hearts, and became to us a God, and we became to him his people. And he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in honor, therein the common law. God decreed concerning those who would attempt to unseat him and overthrow his covenant and bind his people in a statutory bondage, saying, "It shall come to pass that the Lord will give his people rest from their sorrow and from their fear, and from the hard bondage wherein they were forced to serve Leviathan," be that being the New World Order. "They will not rise and possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with their dark cities," and that he would rise up against them at the world's most darkest moment and sweep the children of iniquity with a broom of destruction. "Of that day," the Lord said, "surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand. In that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword will punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and slay the dragon that is in the world. Therefore we, the sovereign people, will reestablish the law of the land, and God will execute his judgment upon all who offend." In 1871, the 41st Congress acted without constitutional authority, an act of fraud, concerning the Organic Act of 1871, a conspiracy of subversion against the United States of America, attempting to depose our covenant with our Creator, and thereby establishing a totalitarian government, unaccountable to we, the sovereign people, under foreign control, behind which the conspiratorial erosion of our Constitution began. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we, the sovereign people, are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are not. Therefore, all latter construction upon the Organic Act of 1871 is as null and void as the Act itself, which attempts to supplant our constitutional republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee by oath. Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state of the Union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. Any court resting upon said act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of the judicial authority, in collusion under the color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said act is injudicious, an act of seditious conspiracy to overthrow our republican form of government. Any clerk failing to file common law documents such as this also enters into seditious conspiracy. U.S. Code, subsection 2385, advocating the overthrow of a government. U.S. C-18, subsection 2384, seditious conspiracy with widespread mutilation, and 18 U.S.C., subsection 2071, failing to file. In 1878, 75 lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association, the ABA, the minions of the New World Order of the Ages. Since that first meeting, the ABA has worked in the shadows, infiltrating our government, our courts, our churches, our institutions, and our media, demoralizing our children, all in an effort to expunge our common law and replace it with civil law, also known as Babylonian law, Justinian law, or Roman law. Today, with about 500,000 bar members, they have perverted the rule of law, deprived we the sovereign people of due process, and have supplanted our Article III courts with jurisdictions unknown. In November 1910, six men, Nelson Alfridge, Abraham Andrew, Henry Davidson, Arthur Shelton, Frank Vanderlip, and Paul Warburg, met at the Jekyll Island Club off the coast of Georgia to write a plan to reform the nation's banking system. The meeting and its purpose were closely guarded secrets, and participants did not admit that the meeting occurred until the 1930s. But the plan, written on Jekyll Island, laid a foundation for what would eventually be the Federal Reserve System. In 1913, three unratified, diabolical acts of Congress set the course for the destruction of the United States of America. The 16th Amendment, first one, 16th Amendment created income tax, an act of extortion, and a sponsor of debtor's prison in direct violation of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 5. No captation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein after directed to be taken. Number two, the 17th Amendment, destroyed the checks and balances of power in violation of the Constitution, Article 5, which states no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. The 16th Amendment removed the state's representation in Washington, giving the Senate to the people who already had representation in Congress, thereby depriving state of its equal suffrage. Every state, being sovereign, has the ability to correct this unconstitutional amendment by the power of nullification. The governor and the two houses of each state need only recall their two unconstitutional senators and send two that will represent the will of the state. Three, the unconstitutional Federal Reserve Banking Act of 1913 gave control of America's economy to a private corporation owned by foreign bankers who answered to no one, and regulate the value of worthless notes of debt called the dollar, robbed we the people of our gold and bankrupt America. Thomas Jefferson warned us when he wrote, "I sincerely believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing powers should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs." President Andrew Jackson stated in reference to the bankers at the state of his administration, "You are a den of vipers and thieves. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." This vile act of Congress was in violation to the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5. The Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of the foreign coin, and fix the standards of weights and measures. And in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall make anything but gold or silver, coin or coin a tender in payment of debts. Charles A. Lindbergh, Sr., concerning the Federal Reserve Act, said, "The financial system has been turned over to the Federal Reserve Board. That board administers the finance system by authority of a purely profiteering group. The system is private, conducted for the sole purpose of obtaining the greatest possible profits from the use of other people's money. This established the most gigantic trust on earth. When the president signs this bill, the invisible government of the monetary power will be legalized. The worst legislative crime of the ages is perpetrated by this banking and currency bill. From now on, depressions will be scientifically created." The Federal Reserve was charted by an act of deceit through an act of Congress when most had gone home for the Christmas holidays on December 23, 1913. No recess had been called while nearly every senator had gone home. Only three senators passed the act with a unanimous voice vote, 3-0. There were no objections. James Madison, the main author of the U.S. Constitution, wrote, "History records that the money changers that have used every form of abuse, intrigue, deceit, and violent means possible to maintain their control over governments by controlling money and its issuance." In 1934, Congressman McFadden on the Federal Reserve Corporation remarks in Congress, "Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed. The Fed has cheated the government of these United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the nation's debt. The depressions, depredations and iniquities of the Fed has cost enough money to pay the national debt several times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of these United States, has bankrupt itself, and has practically bankrupt our government. It has done this through the defects of the law under which it operates, through the maladministration of the law by the Fed, and through the corrupt practices of the moneyed vultures who control it. The United States has been ransacked and pillaged. Our structures have been gutted, and only the walls are left standing. While being perpetrated, everything the world would rake up to sell us was bought in here at our expense by the Fed until our markets were swamped with unneeded and unwanted imported goods, priced far above their values, and made to equal the dollar volume of our homes, of our honest exports, and to kill or reduce our favorite balance of trade. As agents of the foreign central bank, the Fed tried by every means in their power to reduce our favorable balance of trade. They act for their foreign principals, and they accept fees from foreigners for acting against the best interests of these United States. Naturally, there has been great competition among foreigners for the favor of the Fed. Today, under legislation such as the Patriot Act and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, the sovereign people are under attack by our very own elected and appointed servants. Our very way of life is in jeopardy because of the ignorance of the meaning of words and the misuse of the way that government by consent that our founders framed for us has been abused. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC, intelligence report, proclaiming to be the nation's preeminent periodical monitoring the radical right in the United States, is fueling all government agencies and police departments into believing that anyone that uses specific words like militia, sovereign, oath keepers, constitution, patriots, and even founding fathers, to name just a few, are armed, radical, and dangerous cop killers whose names are put on the terrorist watch list. This agitation often causes police to overreact with excessive force and on a few occasions respond by SWAT when these words are used at traffic stops. Much of the overreaction that fuels the police comes from policemag.com that spews forth the lies of the Southern Poverty Law Center to unsuspecting law enforcement agencies and departments. The SPLC is an arm of the bar whose purpose is to excite violence by federal agents and police upon we, the sovereign people, who are trying to make sense of our out-of-control federal judiciary. The fact of the matter is, in the United States, sovereignty resides in the people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will. It will be admitted on all hands that with the exception of the powers granted to the states and the federal government through the Constitution, the people of the several states are unconditionally sovereign within their respective states. Supreme sovereignty is in the people. No authority can on any pretense whatsoever be exercised over the citizen of this state, but such as it or shall be derived from and granted by the people by this state. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people by whom and for whom all government exists and acts, and the laws and definitions and limitations of powers. Now, this particular paragraph was quoted out of Perry versus the U.S., Langsing versus Smith, New York State Law, subsection 2, and Yickwo versus Hopkins. Final paragraph. So how is it that patriotic people who claim to be sovereign and believe in the Constitution and insist that our elected servants keep their oaths and somehow homegrown terrorists are somehow homegrown terrorists? We, the sovereign people, are determined through this action to find out why. Okay, so that's the end of the paper. Again, it's an 8-page paper at this point, and it runs under the title called The Proclamation, which is one of quite a few titles that's going to be inside this paper. Once we finish, as we finish each section of the paper, we'll read it out. We should have another section or two finished by next Monday, Lord willing, and we will read those papers and continue to read those papers. I think it's going to take maybe 2 weeks to get all this paperwork together, maybe less. We'll do the best we can. But we need to get this filed as soon as possible and start this case and start putting the pressure upon these people. One thing we have not done here together as we've worked under National Liberty Alliance and under the name of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is we not actually filed a case summoning people in to respond. We have not done that yet. Everything we have done was to file in courts information and different concerns and also mandamuses commanding the government to obey the law. None of these papers have ever been returned. They have not been responded to, and we don't really know what effect it has had on the people. But we do know it has different effects on different people depending on their position, what is in their minds. I do think we still have some friends in various places. I think we still have people who would love to be on the right side and are stuck in the middle of between a rock and a hard place. And I think once we, the people, really press this case forward and start to put the pressure on these people and start to require them to resign for being in bad behavior, for not doing the duty, maybe responding to these papers or whatever, you know, and also being aiding and abetting the enemy by not responding, aiding and abetting the enemy by supporting unconstitutional, you know, legislation. This is where we're heading for now, and I think before Christmas we will have our case well defined, and this case will be building. We're going to be doing indictments inside this case. We're going to do wherefore clauses requiring these people who are not obedient to the Constitution, who are in bad behavior, who do not respond, and snub their nose at us, that they resign. Our indictments may sit for a while before they're executed, but I do believe that they will eventually be executed. People will come around. Justice will prevail. We will get our courts back. We will take back America. I believe that. But it's all up to us, because only the people can save America. We can't pass it on to anyone else. We can't expect any elected official to do it. They're not going to do it. So you can't expect that your representatives in your state capital to fix the problem. But we can nudge them to make the proper decisions, to do certain things, to start to participate with we the people. Either they are with the people or they're against the people. So we have to put that point and make that point absolutely clear to these people. They need to know that there are people out there supporting this. We really need to get on top of this and push this. Once this paper is filed in the courts, we need to really get on a serious movement across the Internet, really getting people behind us. Even if we go out and start to get, and I think we may do this, signatures of people to sign up in support of what we're doing here in the courts here in New York, which is a national event. It's not a New York event. It is a national event. We're going after everyone on a level of subversion against the United States, any kind of a case that would be sort of a prime case to really make the point of collusion between these people, of conspiracy between these people, of the fact that they are rejecting and denying us our unalienable rights, the fact that they are taking us to jurisdictions unknown. And there are lots of cases out there. But we will find the most important ones that we can find, the ones that really lay out and make it clear, and get them get them up in front in order for the people to start to see this conspiracy. You know, the people who have the experience in the courts, they kind of see it because they live it. As time goes on, they just become they're overwhelmed with what's really going on, and of course try to fix it and try to also defend themselves. And many of us have ended up in jail and lives destroyed because of this out-of-control government. It's time now to really put their feet to the fire, and we need to get some things done. Okay. Obviously, all this is going to cost money. We need your support. If you're not supporting us, we give them $5 or more. Please go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. On the top right side, click on our donation button, and please support our efforts and what we're doing. Also, you know, it seems that it's always the same people over and over and over again, and I feel bad to ask for money, and the same people always have to give the money, and very few outside that group do that. We have thousands of members. We shouldn't have a problem. $5 a month should easily cover everything. That's a lot of money. You just take 2,000 people. That's $10,000 a month. If that doesn't cover the bills and all the things we'd like to do, well, then nothing will. That's plenty of money. So if everyone can really do their share, give that $5 or $10 or $50, whatever it is that you can afford a month to us. And also right now, in order to get this moving, we're going to need a couple of thousand to get this paperwork off. It's going to take us another week or two to get this paperwork together. We hope to file it in the next week or two, but we're going to need money to file it in the next week or two. We've got to file it to quite a few people here. We'll have to figure out how we're going to go with the courts, whether we're going to go with 94 chief judges, or whether we're going to go with the one chief judge up in the Supreme Court of the United States, which I believe is probably the way we're going to go. So, okay, with that, before we move on to anything next, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's move on to any. Are there any questions out there, Jen, that come in over the email?
Yes, there are several. Do you want to go through them now?
Yeah.
Okay, the first is in regard to something that Gerard said several weeks ago about the paperwork. Is the nails, and we just have to be ready to drive them in. Now, this person's thought is reference to the Quaranto of 2014. We the people have nullified all statutory law in place of common law. My idea for driving that nail would be to present that Quaranto at any trial involving statutory law. My question is, has anyone actually done that, and what were the results? Of course, I'm talking about any statutory violation which created no victim.
Yeah, I don't know whether anybody has used that particular paperwork. I do know we've got 17 or so papers up there, and people have used some of them. We have, we're writing also some papers for people to use in their court cases. We're going to use in our court case, and they'll be able to use those paperwork into their court cases too. Anything we write, people are welcome to take and attach or use as some kind of a leverage within their case. I'm not aware of anybody's using that particular paper anywhere particularly, so we don't know. But definitely, it's up to the people to move this. It's up to the people, as Gerard has said, to drive the nail. You know, we can provide the nail and we can provide the paper, but it's the people that got to be the hammer. They got a hammer at home. We need, out there, maybe Gerard can enlighten on the number. I think he told me this number recently, or maybe it was Jan. There's paperwork that went in for redress of grievances. I think it was redress of grievances. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. Out there in the Oregon case, and laying out the fact that this case, this judge needs to really leave the case to recuse herself. And And there was, I think, 113,000 signatures. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. Gerard, are you here? Was it you that told me?
Yeah, that's about the right number, John. It was over 100,000 signatures on that.
Okay, if they can get over 100,000 signatures, why can't we? We're going to set up a paper. We're going to take that paper, by the way. I haven't read it yet. Gerard said he read it. Jen, did you read that paper yet?
No, I have not seen it yet.
Okay. Gerard read the paper. He said it was very good. So I'm going to get a chance. I'll read that paper. And we're going to take that paper and put it in our court case concerning that court case out there in Oregon. We're going to hold that woman's feet to the fire. She is the enemy of the people. She is subverting. The United States of America. She's subverting the people. She is denying us due process. And this case makes it absolutely clear. This case will be a major case that we will be bringing into the New York case here. Again, we got a lot of major cases that we're going to pull in. Jersey is one of them. These people out in Jersey are way out of control. I think it was a New Jersey congressman, who has gone out there and yelled fire in a theater, a packed theater. It's the same thing because he is pointing fingers, making the claim that certain people are terrorists and they're dangerous, they're cop killers, and the police and other police forces. Are listening to this, and this puts people in harm's way. You know, for someone to call you a terrorist or something right away, it puts you in harm's way. You could get killed. And so these people, this congressman needs to be held accountable. I think he needs to resign. We're going to do everything we can to make him resign. But we need people, everybody here needs to be working once we set it up to get signatures. And we'll set something up. We'll probably do it electronically. Hey, do you know if what they did, was it done electronically or did they get physical signatures?
I did not see how they handled it. They have a really good website, and I assumed it was probably done through that somehow.
Yeah. Okay. We'll investigate to see how they did it and how others are doing it, and we'll see what we can do. I mean, we'd like to get the physical signature, but... that's difficult to do, but if we can get people out to a certain page to sign the paper, in other words, getting the force of the people behind us, and that hopefully will also expose these people to the work that we're doing here, to start reading some papers and get involved and signing up as members working with us. And, we need the people. Only the people can save America. I've been thinking for a couple of years now that 2017 would be the real year that we're going to get through. And that was just kind of a rough calculating, looking at our growth and thinking about what we're doing and what we're writing and what we have filed and all these things. And I kind of think that 2017 is the year that we're really going to really get some movement in the court. We can pray on that. We the people, only the people can save America. And our plan is to do it really peacefully, nonviolently, trying to convince those who are doing the wrong thing to start doing the right thing. And we'll forget their sins of the past. Look at, if you get on board and work to save this nation, why would we want to pursue those people who have a change of heart? We'll accept that and give them mercy. Of course, if anyone they've damaged brings them up into a court of law, we have to repair that injury, whatever that might take. But, we need to do what we got to do. We fight this battle with righteousness, with truth, with the pen. And we expect God to win the war because it's really a spiritual war, as we read today. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against rulers in high places. This is a spiritual battle, and ultimately God has to win this battle, not us. But we have to do our part to prepare the way and be there to exercise judgment in the courts and bring back the law of the land. All right, any other questions?
Yes, I have two more. The next one is the void for vagueness doctrine. In American constitutional law, a statute is void for vagueness and unenforceable if it is too vague for the average people to understand. And that's Papacristo versus the city of Jacksonville, Smith versus Gogan, and Winters versus New York. That said, generally, a vague statute that regulates in area of the First Amendment guarantees will be pronounced wholly void.
Okay, and the question is what? Have we ever used that?
Have we ever used this doctrine in our papers?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really familiar until now with that doctrine. But we could use something like that if it came up, but we don't need that because all of these different statutes are really unconstitutional, and that's really the grounds we want to go to. Yeah, it could be void, and we can make that point and use that as an additional part of the battle, but the key to the whole thing is it's null and void anyway. Look, it is extremely important that we understand on what the Bill of Rights and under what conditions the Bill of Rights was signed onto. You know, the Bill of Rights was agreed upon back in 1789 before they signed the Constitution. Half or more than half of the states refused to sign on unless there was a Bill of Rights, and it was agreed to that a Bill of Rights would be added to as part of the Constitution. And so then was done in 1791. We did read this in our paper, and let me read this again. In 1791, we the people of the United States, now from this point forward, this is an exact quote inside the Declaration of Independence on the top of the page. It says, the purpose is to express a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its power, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the grounds of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent end of its institution. And then they resolved it, saying, resolving that this Bill of Rights to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. Now, this is extremely important. The purpose is to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers. Anytime any law in any way violates an unalienable right, it is null and void. You know, we have been lulled to sleep. We have been hypnotized. We're not paying attention to these things. And it's time that the people be woken up to realize this. The capstone of the Bill of Rights being the capstone to the Constitution is so important, because the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights, okay? So any power we've given them or restricted of them, as we read it through the Constitution, you know, there is kind of the language of the Constitution in itself, kind of there are a few places they can go a little stray here, a little stray there. But in order to do that, they have to violate an unalienable right. And once they violate an unalienable right, they now have moved to places where they have no authority. And that's the point. We have to come to realize that. The Bill of Rights is the most important part of our Constitution. You know, our Constitution basically is just lays out the structure of government. It defines the government, gives the power, and it has also some restrictions. But it is finished up. The restrictions are finished in the Bill of Rights. Okay. Hopefully I answered the question. I even forgot what the question was. Well, yeah, on that thing. We've never used that, but we deal with things. You know, the most important thing is jurisdiction, okay? We have to make sure we're in the right jurisdiction. Due process is being received or given, okay? So you got jurisdiction, due process, and anything that is repugnant to any of our unalienable rights is null and void, or repugnant to any part of the Constitution is null and void. And that's where our whole case rests on. We can win everything with those 3 points. Go ahead. Anything else?
I just got a Skype from Ollie saying that we have an emergency, and can we go to Q&A and get Lindsay in? She has something she wants to pass to us.
Okay, before we do that, is that the last question?
Yeah, it's the last one we need to do tonight. We have one, but we can save that for next
week. Okay,
we
can go there, and then we'll move over to Brent after that. But let's do that. Let me open up for Q&A. Hang on a minute. I don't want anyone to come into the Q&A except for the individuals involved in what they want to bring up here, whatever it is. So hang on 1 minute. Q&A.
Yeah, that's Lindsay.
That right. Lindsay's the only one that's coming in?
I think.
Star 6 to get into Q&A, Lindsay.
If it, whoever, Ollie. It's
and Ollie, yep.
Not, it's misspelled, so I can't tell for sure what the name is. Okay. Ollie should
star
be
Star 6 to get into that Q&A, Star 6. And then I think they'll tell you to hit 1. I don't see them coming in. Can you find them and unmute them?
Well,
here, got someone came in, 910. Okay, let's see what you got. Right. Who's calling? Give us your name, your state, and what it's about. Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Harley Parks. I'm from North Carolina. I am 13 years old also as well. When you were talking about that doctrine being used and us getting that petition, signing up to Congress, when you also said that the foreign countries have bought our economy over, why aren't they abiding by the First Amendment and literally they are ignoring our freedom of speech?
Right. All right, we'll try to address that a little later on. I know you're young and it's getting late. I'm not sure you're on the East Coast. I think you said Carolinas. But you can always, if we don't get to your question before, you know, you have to leave unless you can stay up that late, okay. Well, this is recorded and you get it up on a Monday night, a one-day call page anyway. I'll make a note of that question and we'll address it later. First, we want to address some people who have some emergency information they want to give us. Then we want to move over to Brent and then we'll open up to questions and we will address your question as best we can. But what about these people? I don't see them coming into the queue. What was your name, by the way, again?
Harley Parks. I was invited into the call by Russ Van Sant.
Okay. Harley is your first name?
Harley, like H-A-R-L-E-Y, just like the motorcycle.
Right, Harley. Okay. All right, Harley, I'll make a note of your question, and we'll get to that in a little while, and we'll take it from there, okay?
Definitely.
Right,
thank you.
Thank you.
Lindsay we're looking for, yeah.
Okay. Does she have a name on the caller ID?
I don't see it. Ollie, I unmuted you.
I'm trying to get Lindsay to call in. I'm talking to her PM on Facebook. I'll go get her here. Maybe go ahead with something else, and when I get her, then we can go on to that. Go ahead with your other business.
Okay. All right. Well, then let me just real quick respond to Holly a little bit. Maybe when Brent comes on, he may want to respond a little bit to this also. But basically, there has been subversion against the United States before we actually became a nation. This goes right back. The enemy was amongst us even during the Declaration of Independence. The big argument that was taking place back then was the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. And the problem with subversion already taking place and that certain things were being brought into the Constitution that would bring problems to us later on. I truly believe that those problems that may be in our Constitution, I truly believe that they've been neutralized by the Bill of Rights. Again, you know, either they follow the instructions that we've given them, the powers and the authority we've given them within the articles, particularly the first three articles, or the entire, of course, Constitution. But we've divvied out the power and the authority of each of these branches of government, and they're not permitted to go outside. But we've become an ignorant people. There's a conspiracy, of course, that has prevented the truth from being taught in schools. They don't teach the Constitution. They don't teach anything concerning really the real meat of the matter concerning the creation of this nation and the fact of who we are and by what authority we have our powers and by what authority our law comes from. And so through ignorance, that's been a major problem, and people have had the wool pulled over their eyes because they are ignorant. But they have come so far to the point. I mean, look at you take the Second Amendment that the right to arms, okay, shall not be infringed. How is it that we the people can't realize and understand that, look, isn't it an infringement upon us to require us to go jump through certain hoops in order to get a weapon? And then when we get that weapon, we're restricted to certain things about that and prevented from bringing it into maybe New York City or Washington, D.C. I mean, right there in itself, shall not be infringed is very clear. You know, the right of to be able to free to speech. And again, the fact that they mute us in a courtroom to say, you can't talk about the Constitution. You can't bring that up. I don't want you to read that. I mean, there again, that is where you want to be able to really have free speech in a courtroom. And we don't even have it there. Okay. We, the people, again, have been made so ignorant that we don't understand or know these things anymore. Some of the things that I've discovered, I am really like blown away that people don't see it. And that's because we've been so deceived. You want to comment or say something? Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I mean, even in the eighth grade, I take advanced history and I take advanced politics and advanced economics. And I truly believe that it's not, you're not learning anymore. You're more being educated to grow up to be more of a worker than you are to actually succeed in life as a whole.
Yeah, people are being indoctrinated in schools. They're not being taught to think. They're being taught to respond in certain ways. It's the same thing that takes place in bar schools. They teach them what the law is, and they believe it. And I've talked to a lot of lawyers. They come out of school, and they've got, working for so many years, and I talk with them, and I can't believe how much of a robot they still are. How much they don't know how to think. They've not been taught to think. So we really don't have a real good educational system because it's been robbed. Education needs to be returned to the people. It needs to start off in the lower schools. The parents need to make decisions, and each school has to have its own curriculum coming up from the people. Okay. One of the things we here at National Liberty Alliance intend on doing at some point in time is to get our curriculum into the schools and our books into the schools and into the courts so that the people get the real truth of what the Constitution is all about and how to really have a view of it. But people, they don't know. They don't they're ignorant to it and they're frightened of it because they've also been, I think, mass hypnosis between our schools and our education, our entertainment, and every place else. They've been taught that you can't understand the law; you got to get a lawyer. They've also been taught that you can't understand God, or you can't understand the Bible, or you can't understand a relationship with God. You got to go find yourself a priest. See, so they rob you that way. They rob you by bringing someone in between. And if they're not faithful, of course, they're going to lead you the wrong way. And that hasn't happened. They've been demoralizing our people, our children, demoralizing us. And it's time to stand up and do the right thing and expose this, what's going on. It's up to God to win this battle for us, though. We're not going to win it ourselves. We, the people, need to unite and overwhelm them with our numbers and press upon them. But it's up to God to move the hearts and the minds of these people, either through fear or whatever way he does it, in order for us to win this battle. Anything else?
Yep. Well, also, one last thing. With Common Core, Common Core is also pushing down the child's mind and is actually closing in and, child is having this lack of wanting to learn as well because they are, like you said, they are pushing so much into our schools nowadays that we literally are being taught to obey and, not to have creativity or thought or even imagination anymore within our society. And I absolutely think that we need to be putting more educational books written by Ronald Reagan or more educational books like the Constitution. I mean, pushing the Bill of Rights more and actually showing the children that, this is what we can do as a nation other than, you know, being scared of our government, because, you know, the government was created for the people, by the people, and even our Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, he's a civilian. He is not a government worker, but yet still, you know, we are getting so much pushed into our brains that we have to obey, to where we are not, we should be living in fear of our government.
Well, they have created a statutory prison, and we're not the first ones to fall under that. The governments of the world have constantly created statutory prisons. They control the people, their citizens, and they do that through law. And no difference here. They have violated and overturned our law of the land, and have brought in their civil law, the statutory law. So this has been going on for quite some time, and of course now they've captured America by dumbing us down and taking control of this whole process, and really bringing us into subjection or into slavery ultimately. But I do want to, well, first of all, I'd like to ask you a quick question. Are you aware of our civics course and our constitutional course on NLA's page?
I'm not aware of that. I've just gotten some info on that. I'm not totally aware of that, but I do want to get more information on that, definitely.
Okay, well, on the top of our webpage, and there's a blue bar, and 1, 2, 3, the fourth one from the left, it says free courses, and click on there and investigate. I would suggest to take the constitutional course first, because it's a lot quicker. The civics course is very long. But it's a really, it's a wonderful course, and it really is an eye-opening and a revealing. Also, if you really want to understand what we're doing and how we're approaching this, the front page, really devour our front page, not only reading but also watching the videos. And then the next page you want to really devour is the grand jury page, and then the COS page, which is the Committee of Safety, because those three pages really tie together with the courses, ties together everything we're doing and how we can do it, and gives enough knowledge and information to really be able to do it in a good way. But one of the things we've discovered, you know, evil has taken 200 years to bring us to this point where they're finally bringing us down. Our Constitution was so well written, and particularly the Bill of Rights, that has really given us a lot of time by preventing these tyrants from coming in and subverting our nation a lot quicker. It doesn't take this long to subvert a nation. It's taken them 200 years, and they're now just finally coming to that point where we're about to lose everything. And so now is the time that people really need to wake up. But look, they've taken 200 years to do this. We can turn the whole thing around literally in 1 year. If we, the people, take control of our rightful place in government, which means to really be the consentors. That's who we are. We, the people, are the consentors. If we can bring the committeeman process back to its proper place where it is, then we truly would be the consentors of our political process. And we have to get rid of the politics. George Washington spoke about this. Politics have got to leave. Politics is evil. Politics is laying one up against the other. And it's just nothing but evil. I'm so sick and tired of it. But if what we are trying to do is the two things, is give the people the power and the authority back at the political level, and also the power and the authority at the judicial level. If we, the people, become the administrators of our courts to be able to bring together and to prepare the people for the grand jury and the trial juries, and have the ability to get back to what we are, the power of indictment, the right, the authority, and the power to be able to walk into any government building or any place and, you know, look into their computers, look into the desk drawers, see what's going on, ask some questions, just to make sure that the law is being obeyed, because that is our unalienable rights. We are the boss. The boss can walk into the office and get in touch, open, and anything, because he or she is the boss. Well, that's what we are. We're the boss. Now, once we have the power of the people back, the power within the courts and the power within our political process, then everything in government will become fixed, because we will command these people to stop obeying or stop writing or to get rid of all of these unconstitutional acts and legislation, and to get rid of it and stop exercising these things. And if they refuse to do so, then we will remove them from office for being in bad behavior, as the Constitution speaks about. Remove them from office by indictment. Once they're indicted, they have to leave office. Of course, if they're found innocent at the end, they can return back to office, however that might work. But they got to leave office. And that's the key. So we can remove people from office who are not obedient to the Constitution through an indictment or the threat of an indictment. We can force them to do the right thing. Same thing in the political realms. If we, the people, have the ability, you know, you got to ask yourself the question, who is it that puts, where do these people on the ballots come from? Who makes that decision? Well, that's the committee man process. And that also has been robbed from us. And we'll talk more about that. We have information about that up on our website, too. But we'll talk more about that a little later. Right now, we're trying to redevelop that through the committees of safety. The committees of safety became the committee men after the Constitution was written. They became the committeemen. They didn't just go home and stop being politically active. They became very politically active, and they made the decision who's going to run for office and who's not. They made the decisions to who's going to get onto the ballot. And if we, the people, become educated and become more morally minded and understand how this process works and start to really choose people who are statesmen, this is not about a position in politics. You know, I'm going to support this or I'm going to support that. No, just support the people. Okay, be a statesman, do the right thing, and stop taking the funny money from all of these special interest groups. That's what we want, and those are the people. They touch the money. Look, at the special interest group money, that's a bribery. What they are doing, they're being supported by people to pay for their vote. As far as I'm concerned, that's bribery. They belong in jail, and we will get to that point where they will understand that, and when we catch them taking that funny money, whether they're in Washington or in New York, it doesn't matter to me. They need to be removed from office for bad behavior, and they need to be prosecuted in a court of law, and that's it. It's bribery. So that's how we will fix our nation. Common Core and all those things will fall away as soon as we, the people, take control of our courts and take control of our political process. We will take control of the political process once we take control of the courts, because we will move it through the courts and remove these people who are extorting and destroying America. Do you have a final comment?
Yes, final comment is, under U.S. Code Title 18, where it does state, if anyone has, you know, mutilated, destroyed, tampered with any, you know, classified files belonging to the government, and I am getting to one of our candidates here, and on the Democratic side.
Well, you have that a little confused though, because that has to do with any files that are refused to be filed and put through the system through the clerks. So the clerks cannot mutilate. They can't reject or refuse a file. They have no arbitrary powers to decide what they're going to file and what they're not going to file. They need to file everything they're given. The only way they can refuse them is if there is a prima facie problem with the paper. And then they have to identify that prima facie problem in the paper to that individual and give the paper back to them for correction. Once they correct it, they need to receive it. They have no power to refuse. And you see, right now the clerks have become the arm of the judges to prevent certain things and cases and paperwork from getting into the courts. We have filed, ultimately hundreds of papers. And our papers are being prevented from going into the courts in many places. But you know what? That's what U.S. 18 is talking about. I think it was 18. You mentioned 18.
Well, what Hillary did was worse than that, because what she did was destroy files that were subpoenaed. Yes. That was a criminal act. She shouldn't even be running, but we won't go there. We're not supposed to get political on this show.
Well, I totally agree with you on that one, because, yeah, like I said, under Title 18, it says that no one shall take office after that, and she definitely should not be running under that title.
You're right. Under U.S. 18, it's 2384 and also 2071. So, but okay, look, we're going to move on. We appreciate
Ollie's gonna brief
your questions. What was that? Ollie's ready?
Ollie's ready. No, he's going to brief us.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello. Am I muted?
You got it. Go ahead. We can hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Lindsay was too shook up to come on. I am shook up, but I'll give a briefing. Okay. bear in mind that a veteran from that era, when they bitch about their health and start hauling for help, they need help. Now, for your information, John, we have been, they've just been trying to get visitation rights for 6 weeks. They have allowed nobody in to see him. He went through, they only give him so many minutes a month. He run out of minutes, and he didn't get to call Lindsay till a day last week. At that time, he said, I need somebody to come in and see me, please. Okay. Tonight he called. He said, Carrie's his wife. She put made up a doctor's request, which they sent them, requesting special made boots and a cane. They sent it to the warden. They denied him this. They still don't know if he had a stroke or not up in Montana.
Who are we talking about?
Joseph Robertson.
Joseph Roberts, okay.
Montana, the Montana case.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Now. They still don't know if he had a minor stroke. It affected his eyesight and this. He also requested some glasses, which they denied. They still have not given him a CT scan. Okay. He called Lindsay tonight and relayed all this to her, and they said, please help me, help me, help me. Now,
well, as you know, to help him, we need, affidavits. So if she's willing to do an affidavit and others are willing, you know that we've been working on trying to get affidavits on this case, and it's been tough. But we do intend on taking this case into our court case as one of the first cases, along with also the case in Oregon. If the case in Oregon is successful and they are released, which it looks like they may be, if that's the case, we're still going to take that case in, but we don't have to be in such a hurry on it at that point in time. We also have the Arizona case with the Bundys that we have to be concerned about and be prepared for. But Montana is one of our high priorities because we do know that we're looking at life and death here also.
Yeah, this case right now, I think, is a life or death matter. That's a true emergency.
It is life or death. We need a well check, and we need a well check now. It is life and death.
Okay, if you get the affidavits, more than one if possible, but maybe the one affidavit is sufficient enough. But if you get two or three people, it's better because you get the whole point of view. We will try to write a paper right away. Remember, we've already written some papers, and they've already violated these people's unalienable rights. And if we're in the court within the next week, let's say, or two at the most, then we will pull this case and that judge into our court case for subversion. Ultimately, high treason, because you see, high treason is when you go after the sovereign. If you violate the sovereign, that's high treason from anybody who is a place of trust, an elected or appointed individual, and so on.
That's all well and good, John, but we're talking about a man's life here, and we don't have days.
Yes.
We have
Gerard, are you there, Gerard?
Yeah, look at I think in a case where his life, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
I think in a case where his life is in danger and he's got some serious medical problems that they're purposely not listening to, that you can run a habeas corpus to produce him and they have to answer. I was talking
We have done a habeas corpus, but we can build upon that, and I absolutely agree. Look at the fear of what's going on with these people.
A habeas corpus specific to this issue. They do it,
yes.
You know what I mean, to bring him forth for a health check. I was talking to Dan Bailey about that, and you should get together with him, John. He is collecting affidavits. And he's cataloging them, and,
We keep asking for them, and they haven't sent it to us,
well,
and that's why we haven't been as active.
He's had the same trouble we had getting with them, but any affidavits he gets are the same affidavits that we need. Now, Kelly has lots and lots of them, and he was explaining to me what the problem was as far as figuring out which ones to use and where. We discussed that. I won't take time tonight on that, but he is working on that. He's working with a couple of people. Those affidavits, he should send them to us because when he gets them, we can use them. But as far as this Joe being, you know, in danger, I do believe you could do something like a habeas corpus in order to bring
him. Yeah, I've got some ideas and some papers that we can do in him, and also put the fear into the judge, the fact that they're going to be held liable for the life of this individual. If they're not receiving the things that they need to receive, then they're going to be held liable. Also, on top of this, this man doesn't belong in jail, and he also he's going through an appeal system, and there is absolutely no reason for him to be released. Now, we've written papers for his release, and they've ignored it. We need to press more upon that if he dies in jail, then as far as we're concerned, he died because they killed him. They put him in jail. He's got certain medical problems. He's up there in age, and he's not getting the necessary treatment. You put it all together, as far as I'm concerned, it's not manslaughter. It's murder. It's beyond manslaughter. And they have collected, and it becomes a conspiracy, because it's not just one person doing this. It's a conspiracy. We filed our papers. The clerk is involved because they didn't put the paperwork through, and the process didn't go through the processes. We've sent these papers to the chief judge on the federal level, who was responsible to hear this case, and he or she ignored it. We send the papers to the judge in the case itself. They have ignored it. We've laid out the law to them, and the law is clear. In this case here, this man must be released while he's waiting for his appeal. It's not that it would be nice to let him go, or maybe they should. No, he must be released. The law requires it. Because
his attorney said he filed an appeal. He said he filed an appeal. I don't think he did. I don't even think he
filed
an
appeal anyway. We will also make that point, that there's funny business going on with his appeal system, but we, the people, filed it for him under the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and we've got the proof of that filing, and we will also lay it all out.
The clerk
wouldn't
require it, though.
Huh?
But the clerk didn't file it.
It doesn't matter. It was still sent to them. Then that's just more of a conspiracy. They're going to be held liable for his death. If not today, tomorrow they will be, because we will get the system back and they're going to go to jail. Look, what we need is really communications with the people. You know, get a meeting together, set it up, and Gerard and I and Jan and a few others who may be necessary to get it to this meeting, we'll get to the meeting with them, get all the information. But I don't want to have the meeting until they really have affidavits in hand. Then we get a meeting, because we've done this already and we don't get the affidavits in hand. You know, that's a problem. If we don't have the affidavits, we can't go in there. I don't know that people really understand that. You have to have sworn statements. Without the sworn statements, you have no court case. You can't say boo, and rightly so. So that's what we need.
Look, they've been talking to a senator. Somebody should call that senator and make him known that Joe's life is in danger, because I think that senator, I don't know, is it one of his senators in his state? But it doesn't matter. Use your
election. If we have the person who is talking to a senator to get in touch with us and have a little meeting with us, then we'll get in touch with the senator collectively on the phone and get some talking going with the senator.
Right, because if he makes a phone call, that's very powerful. If you can get that senator to make a phone call
I've got another meeting with Corey Gardner's staff tomorrow. Their office is a half mile down the road. We were scheduled to have a conference with. His caseworker that I've been working with, he's not there today. We talked to the other guy who was there. He's going to be back tomorrow. We're going to have a conference. I'm going to talk in person and talk to him again. And I'm going to initiate a call from Corey Gardner to the warden, to the governor, whatever he needs to do. But something is going to rock and roll. Heads are going to roll. Heads are going to roll.
I think
in order to do anything, we need affidavits.
Contact the governor, and I know senators there in Colorado also. I'll make calls too.
All right, do whatever you can on phone calls, get whatever political backing you can get. But nevertheless, words are the key. You have to have words that are sworn to, and when you have that, then you have a case. Then you can do something. Then you can move the court or try to move the court. And with opening this case here, if we can't move the court, we will try to move the court without, you know, as we're opening this case. But once we open this case, if we haven't moved that court yet, we will move that court to our court. But again, affidavits. you can make all the meetings you want. I'll meet with them and people and talk, but I'd like to have their affidavits before we meet. That'll give me more questions.
The only affidavit I can make right now is my denial. It's my denial. I've been two or three weeks. I sent in the regular form from the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
Right, you can do your affidavit for whatever you can experience, your firsthand information in this whole business, and anyone else can do their firsthand information. But we do need inside here the fact that they're rejecting to give him his necessary medical needs. That's what we need,
That is the problem. That is the problem.
Get Lindsay to write what Joe told her.
Yeah,
That's first-hand information.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And is his wife willing to fill one out as far
no,
as his
that,
medical
that, that, that's the that's well, the problem. That's the problem. She's
right.
Been soured on the NLA, plus she's afraid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't care if she's soured on the NLA. This is her husband's life, and nobody else
yeah,
is doing
it. Yeah, but she's
that,
afraid.
So
she doesn't feel that she's got any protection, and she's elderly, and she's about ready to lose everything, and she's in she's in the twilight of her life, and they're destroying that.
She's gonna lose everything anyway. She needs to start
but
fighting. She needs
someone
to get
has
her
to convince
ass.
Her. Who's gonna
well,
convince
then
her?
She needs to move in with somebody or something. The fact of the matter is cowering in the corner is not the answer. I'm sorry, I'm being tough.
Agree.
Love. Somebody needs to get to this woman and tell her she needs to step
okay,
up.
Okay, Robert. Robert.
Husband.
Hey, Robert.
We need Cat.
Robert, call Cat. That's what I was just going to say. Robert, call Cat and have her talk to her.
And remember, let us accept first-hand information as a next friend and could make the point of information second-hand that becomes first-hand information because of the fact that really, we're looking at extortion here. We're looking at fear-mongering or whatever word you want to find here.
Okay.
They are frightening this woman to fear to do anything because she's probably afraid she'll end up in jail.
Look, she has nothing to lose at this point. She needs to put in her affidavit that she was fearful writing this. It's the bully in the schoolyard. If you don't walk up and punch him in the nose, they get worse. She needs to understand
that. Meanwhile, we still have another person who has firsthand information that has been told.
We have three people, I think. We have three people we can get it from, so we need to work on that also.
Let's get it. We don't need all three. As long as we can get one or two or more is nice, but one or two is good. Look at affidavits. We can only argue anything we can get in an affidavit. If it's not in an affidavit, we can't argue it.
Well, get Lindsay to write what Joe told her.
That'll do it. That's first-hand information.
Now, right now, she's making a video on it.
I want to be blunt on this, and I'm sorry to be so blunt. The videos are not going to save this man. The videos are not going to save anyone. It might help to get people together and to help to get people mobilized and do things and get, signatures on paper. But look at the 100,000 signatures, and it was just pissed on. It doesn't mean anything to them. You know, why? Because, they know it's going to fall away. People are going to get frustrated. They don't know what to do next because nothing has been put into an illegal position or an illegal arena. Look, they fear us because of the way we do things. Now we're moving to the next step. We have not done the next step yet. Because we have not been ready to do the next step. We almost did it a while back, but we were prevented because we wanted to work with this case, and we thought, okay, let's instead of doing a New York case, let's be on the other side of the nation. Let's do it over there because it seems that's where we need to be. Well, it turns out that that's not the case. It's not going to happen that way, and that's okay. I believe that was held back because we have achieved more knowledge since that point in time, more knowledge than
we all made mistakes, John. We all made mistakes, but we learned.
Absolutely.
We all learned.
But it's time for them. It's time for them to write the affidavits and understand what really moves cases. Okay,
yeah.
That's what we need. That's what they will fear.
Yep.
And they will brush it aside and ignore it and make it go away in different ways because the people don't know what to do next. That's not the case with us. And that's why they're worried with us. And that's why they do fear us. We know that. But, we can take this paperwork and fear building on top of fear will eventually break this case. And that's what we're counting on.
Look, at between what Dan has filed with Shauna, and he's working on this case too now, getting affidavits, and what we will do, I can't see us not prevailing at this point. This is the point of the spear now. This has come to a head. And putting the paperwork in the proper way with the proper words, which never, it hasn't really happened yet as far as in a case that they had to answer. And that's what's happening now. And this is what's worrying them. And yeah, they get kind of, when they're scared, they get, well, like Thornton says, there's nothing so frightful as ignorance in action, but they're just digging themselves the hole deeper. And look at, our forefathers were willing to die for this country. We have to have the same resolve. You can't let them scare you into believing that they're going to kill you or whatever else they're going to do. Look at, you cannot give them the satisfaction of saying uncle, of letting them do what they're going to do. We got enough good people behind us. I can't see this thing now. If we put the paperwork in, like you said, we get the sworn statements, the affidavits, very powerful, very, very powerful.
Let's get that together. Let's get a meeting and get a briefing going so that we understand all the aspects and we understand the integration between these things, you know, what this one's doing and what that one's doing. We have to put the whole story together. So let's start with preparing for a meeting, see if you can get all these people to come together for a meeting, get a date and a time. Try to get two dates and two times, so in case we can't make one, we could do the other. And the other thing is to make sure they understand they need to come to these meetings with affidavits. Even if they're not sworn to yet, even if they're in preliminary form, that's fine. Let's get them. We'll help them finish it up and get it, and then they can go out and get it signed. But we can't file one piece of paper without any proof. We can't go into a court and say, hey, you know, file papers over there and say, hey, or threaten these people and say, hey, you're not giving this guy his medical needs and you're not doing this and you're not doing that. As far as I'm concerned, all that is hearsay. And that's what they're, from their position is, yeah, what makes you say that? What proof do you have we're not doing that? I don't have any. I have nothing. I have words from people saying this. You put in a sworn affidavit, now I got something.
Yeah.
Now we can take
it. Bottom line, Holly, is we rely on you right now. The sooner you can accomplish getting Lindsay to write that affidavit, the quicker we can act.
Well, and then bring everyone together in order to really give us a briefing, and we bring the whole thing together, you know?
Well, they had her where she was playing their game and maintained low profile, no longer doing rallies across the street. I told her just a few minutes ago, I said, hey, that we are beyond that now. We go public, we go all the way. I let it be known that it's going to be done, right? It's going to go now. We cannot pussyfoot. We're not going to pussyfoot around anymore. I will tell her when we get done here, we need that affidavit and we need it tomorrow.
Okay, so let's do
hey,
this. Go ahead, Gerard.
Did they actually tell her they're not letting her in to see him because she was doing rallies across the street?
Well, no, that was brought up to start with, but they sent her an email this morning. She's a security risk.
Well, if they would put that in wording that she's not being admitted in because she's doing rallies across the street, oh, my goodness. You talk about a First Amendment right.
Yeah, but what does that mean, a security risk?
Look,
they have a duty to explain
themselves.
She's
exercising her First Amendment rights protesting, and they're calling her a security risk.
We want them to say that. We want them to tell us what a security risk is.
Right.
Well, let them say that because that's not a security risk. That's a concerned person trying to get
justice. Well, she's got that email that says it, right, Ollie?
Yeah. She got an email.
They don't say why she's a security risk. They didn't say she's a security risk because of that. If they do, that's an immediate lawsuit. I'm telling you what, all the civil rights people will jump on that in a heartbeat. Never mind.
Well, maybe not.
Okay, another fact.
But hold it, everybody. Look, we're in here talking about things and we don't even really have anything to talk about. We've got the information. We've now been informed. Now we need to make a meeting and let's get the meeting going and get something really worthwhile that we can use in the courts. Is there anything else to report? Otherwise, we need to get back to our programming. Is there anything else to report, Ollie?
One other little fact. A couple of weeks ago, they called Joe in. Warden called Joe in, climbed on him. Your people cannot be taking pictures from across the street. They took pictures of guards. They jumped on him for that. Your people are taking pictures of the prison. That is a security risk.
Well, a case may be able to be made, but there is no law against it. So, you know, you can get that into an affidavit. It's something we might be able to make a point on. I don't know. We'll look into that. I mean, bear in mind, it is, you know, you got to realize, well, okay, you shouldn't be taking pictures of a prison. That's probably true. But taking a picture of the front end of the prison where people come in and out, I don't see a problem with that per se. Going around and videotaping the whole prison.
It's not right across the street. It's over, you know, a few hundred yards from the street itself.
Right. Okay, let's discuss. Let's get the meat of the matter together in a meeting. Let's discuss this in a meeting. Make the arrangements. If you can't get a hold of me, get a hold of Jan. Jan can get a hold of me and can work out the arrangements. And we'll try to get the people who need to be at this meeting. We'll record the meeting, and we'll do the best we can. But again, you know, if we're going to come in and talk, and then they're going to walk away, and we sit around, and a week later we still have no affidavits, it's just a waste of our time, too. You know,
yeah.
So we got a lot of work to do, a lot of work, and we're very, very busy. And but we will take the time to fill this in, because it is that important, and it's on our mind and our hearts. But they have to come up with some clout. They got to come up with affidavits. But unless you have anything else, I want to move on with the programming. Okay?
Go ahead.
Okay. Appreciate the information, Ollie.
Thanks.
And get back to us in the next day or two or whatever. Just get back to us as soon as you can. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to move over to Brent. Brent Winters is the author of Excellence in Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Hopefully he's still here or is here. Yes, he is. Okay, you got the mic, Brent. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I am considering this situation with this fellow up in Montana, and it might be helpful to speak about it a little bit, because I assume there are people on the call that don't have a clue what's going on and who this fellow is and what's happened. But this man's situation is the result of the expansion of federal jurisdiction into criminal law. The expansion of federal jurisdiction into the area of criminal law. Right now, as we speak, and the latest figures I have come from 1999 with a commission that was headed up by one of the Supreme Court justices to study what they were calling the federalization of criminal law. And they were concerned that the general government sitting in Washington, D.C., as our forebears used to call it, are expanding their criminal jurisdiction. And they can see that the states have little say about it. This fellow in Montana dug some ponds on his property somewhere near the Flathead Valley up in there. He had a small mining operation, apparently. And the problem came down to this. The court said that there's such a thing as waters of the United States. Waters of the United States. Now, pray tell, I would ask any common sense thinking person, what in the world are waters of the United States? Where in the world does that phrase come from? It certainly doesn't come out of our Constitution, and the general government, the federal government in Washington, D.C., has no jurisdiction outside of the strict interpretation, the narrow interpretation of our Constitution's grant of authority, grant of jurisdiction. The only possible way the federal government could find jurisdiction over a man building ponds and draining those ponds into a creek, which did happen too, the only way they could find jurisdiction over that is under what we call the Admiralty Clause. The Admiralty Clause, and indeed that is where that jurisdiction, they say, it comes from. And as we speak, they're stealing land on the Red River between the border of Oklahoma and Texas. stealing ranch land, hundreds of acres of it, privately owned, saying that it's subject to the Admiralty Clause. We've come a long way with that Admiralty Clause. Now, in our early days, the Admiralty Clause covered any creek, any branch, any river that could float a dugout canoe, because in those early days, commerce depended upon dugout canoes and small creeks and rivers. So it's always been understood that the Admiralty jurisdiction extends, and still does, by the way, extends to the tributaries of rivers. But then the question comes, what if the branch of a river, the tributary, only has water in it once or twice a year? Or what if someone's blocking water to run into a tributary, and by them blocking water or diverting it to irrigation, that creek that could have been navigatable by a little canoe no longer is navigatable? Well, those are all real questions and sensible questions. But to say that there is such a thing as waters of the United States is absurd, utterly absurd. Now, this all started back when the federal government said it had power under the Constitution to form corporations, which it doesn't, such as the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Columbia River Authority, the Green River Authority, stretching over state boundaries and controlling water, the flow of water. Well, by some stretches, the jurisdiction may be there, but the power to create corporations has never been there and still isn't there. And that's a lot of our problem. But we've gone from four clauses in our Constitution, just four. Four clauses that grant power to the federal government that's possibly a criminal jurisdiction authority. We've gone from that to now right around 6,000 statutory federal crimes, 6,000. And most of those overlap, so we don't know exactly how many federal crimes, because some of them are redundant, if not in law. And add to that, they're conflicting with state law. The way I understand this fellow's case up in Montana, this Joseph, his first name is Joseph Robertson, I believe it is. The state of Montana had okayed all of his ponds, said that was all right. He was all right there, but then the feds come blowing in. And they said they weren't going to tolerate it. And of course, they ended up sending him to federal prison. And the jury was foolish enough to go along with it. Well, that's kind of what's happened there. It's the expansion of federal criminal jurisdiction. By the way, those four kinds of things, those matters over which the federal government had jurisdiction that could possibly be construed as having criminal jurisdiction are treason against the United States. That's number one. Number two is counterfeiting the current coin and securities of the United States. Number three, the third area of law that could be possibly a criminal jurisdiction, is piracies and felonies committed on the high seas. And the fourth area of possible jurisdiction is violations of international law. So violations of international law, piracy and felony committed on the high seas, and then counterfeiting the current coin and securities of the United States, and treason. That's it. That is it. And I didn't put this together until I noticed that I was reading these old grand jury charges, judges making charges to federal grand juries, John Jay, James Wilson, going way back to the beginning of our country. And then thenceforward for 100 years, and every charge made to a grand jury that I read had to do with piracy and counterfeiting. And well, they had confined themselves, federal law had confined itself to those four kinds of crimes. And not until a little over 100 years ago, did that begin to change slowly with the rise of the power of the federal government. It began in earnest with what we call today prohibition. That gave birth an excuse to birth things like the FBI, which, of course, helped justify the CIA, the NSA, and the IRS figured into all that, of course. With all these bureaucracies, they were built upon too much federal jurisdiction, criminal jurisdiction, prohibition, and then the child of prohibition, anti-drug laws, have built the criminal jurisdiction, claimed criminal jurisdiction of federal bureaucracies, and of course then that gave courage to the states to do the same thing. And that's why we are now overwhelmed with, there weren't even any federal prisons in the United States until after World War I. If somebody committed one of those four kinds of crimes, crimes relating to those four things, felonies committed on the high seas, piracy, counterfeiting, treason, and violations of international law. If someone committed or broke one of those laws that maybe Congress had passed in those four areas, they were sent to either Leavenworth, an army prison on an army base, or Sandpoint, or the Navy Yard down in Norfolk, and that's where they served out their time. That's the only federal prisons that were available. And then along came Alcatraz, and Alcatraz was a showboat prison. Nothing but a show business prison to make a big show. The FBI wanted to make a big show of how tough they were on crime, and they built this fortress-looking ugly thing out on Alcatraz Island so it would be highly visible. By the way, notice prisons, even state prisons, are also always, almost always built along interstates to be highly visible, so it's a good political statement. And but Alcatraz, amazingly, they could never even find enough federal prisoners at that time to fill it, and never did. Of course, it's defunct now, but the federal government is building one new maximum or minimum prison every year, about, on average, and then a camp, a low-security camp beside it, to gather slave labor to take care of the grounds and take care of the maximum or minimum prison. That's the policy now and has been for several years. And we now jail more people in America than any country in the world per capita, including communist China and Russia. Somebody said to me recently, yeah, but in Russia, in communist China, they may not jail a lot of people. They just shoot them. They just shoot them. And that's really kind of true. They don't take time to jail people. They just shoot them for the darndest things. And it's always a kind of a public thing. If you want to follow and watch, you can watch them shoot people. So it's part of their culture to shoot people in the head like that, then make the family pay for the bullet, I think is the custom. It's very ugly. I hope we're encouraged a little here. I'm going to talk about something briefly, the militia of the several states. Hope we're encouraged by what is happening politically. I'm hoping that my hope and my encouragement is not for naught. It looks like it could be true. But at any rate, we're talking about the militia clauses. There are four of them. The first militia clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 15 and 16, it transverses both of those, 15 and 16. It has to do with Congress. The second militia clause has to do with the states. The third militia clause has to do with the duties of the presidents of the United States, respecting the militia of the several states. And the fourth militia clause, unlike the other three, delegates no duties to anybody. It recognizes and guarantees the protection of the duty. That's what a right is, the duty of the people to keep and bear. Bear is an old word that means carry, C-A-R-R-Y. It means to hoist up and lift away, bear, arms. Then it says, shall not be infringed. That means in no way is government allowed by any laws or regulations to nibble around the edges of this right. In no way does our Constitution allow government to even nibble around the edges of this right. Infringe. What is a fringe? That's the edge, fringe. What does infringe mean? That means to nibble around the edges. That's what it means. I can't change that. That's what it says. If people don't like it in government, if the godless, lawless crowd and that's what that amounts to challenge or hamper a duty given by God to protect oneself and one's family. Anyone who do that, who does that, is godless and lawless. We need to come back to fundamentals. No fancy legal talk. Matter of fact, fancy legal talk is intended to obscure the simplicity of the words. Simplicity. Take them for what they mean. It was written for folk to read, not for lawyers to obfuscate. Or anybody else. There are a lot of people who like to play lawyer. People talk about lawyers. There's a lot of folks out there that like to play lawyer. And they like to obfuscate, too, and get into the details and make them confusing. We don't want to do that. There are four militia clauses. The first one relates to the duties of Congress. The second one signifies and talks about the duties of the states. The third one talks about the duties of presidents. And the fourth one is the well-known Second Amendment. Well, that's just a review I wanted to get to, and we'll get back to trying to pick up where we left off in our discussion. We're getting close to the end, I hope, I think. Let me get up here to where we left off last time. By the way, the substance of what I'm talking about here, you can find it in my book, The Militia of the Several States, Our Constitution's Answer to Enemies Foreign and Domestic. It's just a little handbook, about 100 pages. Tried to make it compact and easy to grasp, but if a fellow wants to try to grasp it, and it's available, I think, on Amazon. You can type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and it'll come up. And I think you can also find it at commonlawyer.com. Just type in commonlawyer.com, and it'll come up. The militia of the several states is always armed and ready to respond. If it isn't, then the security of a free state is put in jeopardy. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. So an unarmed militia, it doesn't make any difference whether the militia is mustered, armed, unarmed. The militia is. It's here. It cannot be done away with. It consists of all those of the people. Of the people, able-bodied to bear a weapon effectively in battle. A military-grade weapon. Whether summoned by state or local command to meet the threat that comes fast and without warning. That's what the militia is for. That's why sometimes on these Monday night calls, the committees of safety are discussed. Committees of safety. Safety is an important word. The Latin word is salvation. That doesn't mean they'll save your eternal soul, but it is safety in this life to be ready. That's what the security of a free state's all about, being ready. That means to keep and bear. If you don't have you have the right, but if the right is not protected, the duty to keep and carry a military-grade weapon, then the security of our country is at risk. And never, since probably the days of the wars between the northern and southern peers of the states, never since then have we been as much at risk in our unity as we are today because of the lawless, godless, animalistic, self-serving crowd, the good feel crowd, that wants to get rid of the protections of the Second Amendment. To keep one's firearm in one's home and to carry it loaded, having become familiar with it through regular use, regular, keyword, regular use, if you do not regularly fire your firearm, you are not familiar with it and you are not regular. And a well-regulated, that means regular militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right, that's the old Anglo word that means duty, to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Such persons who do this, says the Second Amendment, are necessary to our freedom. Such persons who keep and carry military-grade weapons are necessary to our freedom. That's what the people that drafted and, most importantly, ratified the Constitution. That's what they believed, because the smell of gunpowder still hung in their noses at that time, and they had seen much death and destruction and threat of it, and they didn't want that to happen again. And don't think, and the only reason, don't think, the only, The only reason anybody wants to disarm you is so that they could do to you something that they could not otherwise do were you armed. That's the only reason. There is no other reason. I don't care what they say. I don't care whether they cry, laugh, or scream, or argue, or reason. People who say otherwise are deluded liars, either deluded liars or both. Usually a person who is a liar first, then he deludes himself and he becomes worse. Of that there is no question. Kings make war and war makes kings. Kings make war and war makes kings. And war is hell. This is conventional common sense wisdom, borne out by much experience. War is hell, not only for those bearing the battle, but also for those who must live under the power bureaucrats keep after war is over. Let me repeat that. War is hell, not only for those bearing the battle, but also for those who must live under the power bureaucrats keep after war is over. Don't let them keep it. The reason the powers that be are keeping up the wars, the battles that we are now keeping up, is to retain power. That's why. We have no business killing people the way we're killing people and being killed on command without a declaration of war from the United States Congress. And even that's questionable sometimes. But at least we ask the people in government to observe the modest inconvenience before you take our children from us and make them face ugly bullets and shrapnel. At least follow the modest inconvenience of asking Congress for a declaration of war. That's all we ask. Matter of fact, at this point, it's time to stop talking. It's time to stop talking to them, those guys. You're wasting your time. You're beating your head against the wall. That it's come time to just do. Do what is right. Do what is lawful, not what is unlawful. I want to throw out a caveat here. I mentioned this maybe before, I think I did, but I want to mention it again. Talking about citizens' arrest. Citizens' arrest is important. Important part of our common law that does not exist in other countries around the world under the law of the city. The law of the land says, yes, citizens have a duty, not a right, again, have a duty in some cases to arrest people. Just folk, not government officials. But I want to throw out some caveats. Number one, you don't have that right or authority or jurisdiction to do that unless you catch a fella in the very act of committing a felony. You have to catch them in the very act of committing a felony. A citizen does not, in America, does not have the right to arrest somebody unless they find them. It's like that story in the Bible. You know, the law of God says these fellows said, we caught this woman in the very act of adultery. And there's some indication there that they probably set the thing up, or they themselves were the one committing adultery, some of them, and they caught her in the act of doing it while they were doing it with her. That's a novel legal problem that occurs here in the United States sometimes. And you can read the cases about it. It's rather fascinating how the courts try to deal with that. Some states have passed laws to deal with it, the conflict of interest there. But in the very act, to do a citizen's arrest, you must catch them in the very act. And number two, if you find the judge committing a felony while he's holding court, see, you can't do it for a misdemeanor. You've got to know the difference. Don't try to arrest somebody for a misdemeanor. And don't ever try to arrest a judge while he's sitting on the bench holding court. And even if you see him committing a felony while he's doing that, I don't know what that would be, but if you did see a judge doing that, you'd have to wait till court was over. But if you waited till court was over, then you wouldn't have caught him in the act, so you can't arrest him. It's almost, I can't think of any way you could arrest a judge. Now, if a judge was trying to shoot somebody in court, he just went crazy, pulled out a pistol, and tried to kill people, I'm sure the law would find necessity there. But I haven't heard of that happening. Now, I've heard of some judges doing some pretty pathetic things on the bench, so pathetic I don't even want to talk about it. It's the kind of thing that nobody ought to talk about. Whether or not, even in such a case, if he's not hurting anybody, if he's not in that, at that very time when you want to arrest him, maiming or killing people, it would be doubtful. And be careful with citizens' arrest. Make sure you know the citizen of your state. And the things I've just said are general rules of common law. In every state, there'll be some variations. Be not amazed, brethren, as though some strange thing happens, bureaucrats and their politicians use war to unify men and nations to fill their selfish lust. Bureaucrats and their politicians use war to unify men and nations so that they may fill their selfish lusts. Ignoring our Constitution's militia of the several states allows our standing armed forces to become the ego-led politicians' tool for foreign vendetta and domestic vengeance. I want to read that one again. It was kind of long, but I think it's important. And ignoring our Constitution's militia of the several states allows our standing armed forces to become the ego-led politicians' tool for foreign vendetta and domestic vengeance. With such examples, all history, as well as our own, is replete. But we oughtn't be discouraged. Unique among all countries, our Constitution recognizes and arranges, in the clearest of words, the only real and ready remedy for such madness, and it is the militia of the several states. Patriotic feelings are a God-given desire. I have them once in a while, hope you do. But it sleeps in the soul of every right-headed man, and it could be awakened given the right circumstances. But politicians abuse that natural desire, substituting politics for patriotism. This is a common and ancient ruse, substituting politics for patriotism. In the realm of politics, perception is reality. And everyone who runs for political office figures that out sooner or later. It's all about perception. You'll get elected if you create the right perception. As one fellow said, politics is show business for the less than glamorous people. And it's nothing but show business. I'm not saying we can avoid that problem. I'm not saying, oh, shucks. I noticed Donald Trump, he always wears nice clothes, tries to look presentable. Hillary, she plays the game of show business and tries to present herself to be something other than she is. She can't hide it. Is Donald Trump who he thinks who he presents himself to be? I hope so. But in any case, he's certainly trying to put his best foot forward, and there's nothing wrong with that. But keep in mind, politics, nonetheless, is inevitably, it has to be, show business and the creation of perception. If you're going to run for public office, it is your job to create the perception that you believe is true. And hopefully you're creating a true perception. But unfortunately, of course, men being nothing more than men, and that ain't saying much, and women, most of them are out to create a false impression, a false perception. All a politician needs to do is create in people's perception, an enemy to their country, and slumbering feelings of patriotism awake. An enemy. Now, don't be fooled. I'll throw in another footnote here. Things, mere things, are not our enemies. And the evil empire is constantly and has been, my earliest memories, the first one I remember is the war on poverty. Poverty is not a person. Poverty is a thing. It's a concept. And it's not defined really at all. I know this. I've learned this in life. Poverty is not defined by lack of money. I know a lot of people don't have money, and they're not in poverty at all. I know a lot of people that have a lot of money that live like they're in poverty all the time. Poverty is not a matter of money. But it's not defined right, and the government declares war on things, poverty, and then it declares war on things like hunger, and then it declares war on things like guns, and then it declares war not on terrorists, no, not on terrorists, declares war on terror. Those are all delusions and lies. War is waged against men who are evil, if it's waged right. And it's waged to take dirt, land, and if it isn't, it's a waste of blood and money. And we certainly should have learned that at the Battle of Fallujah the Battle of Fallujah. I found an old friend not long ago on Facebook standing beside a tombstone. He had been a career Army officer, and he was standing beside the tombstone of his only son, killed at the Battle of Fallujah. I hadn't seen him in 35 years, and I didn't know if I should try to contact him. I can't imagine what him and his wife feel. Fallujah then, of course, was given back to the enemy. This seemed to be what happened in Vietnam over and over and over again. And then we finally just pulled out. Didn't fight for dirt. And we were fighting, asked the boys that were there, and they're men now, no, they're old men, many of them, asked them what they were taught to be fighting for. They were taught to win the hearts and souls of the people. That's not what war is about. War is against men, and if it isn't against men to take land, it's a waste of blood and money. War is not against things, terror, poverty. God doesn't present it that way in the Bible, and our experience all through all of history should teach us that. The true-blooded American offers his services, opens his pocketbook, and even gives himself and his sons to kill and be killed if he feels patriotic enough. And false enemies can move the unwary to be willing to give up the two greatest things they have, their property and their lives. Of course, their freedom, it's a property. That's a right, too, of course, a piece of property. It's a right. It fits into that. Men will do that if patriotism arises in them. But don't be fooled as to what your enemy is and what patriotism is. That's why the militia of the several states is so important. One more little thing, and then we'll quit. And to be sure, love of country is admirable and even necessary. And by the way, that's what the word patriotism means. Patriot, patria. This is important to understand. Patria means fatherland. Fatherland. We are an English-speaking people. Our language is a Germanic language. Therefore, land, in Germanic tongues, is in the masculine. It is our fatherland, and this whole idea about the motherland, of England being the motherland, was a Roman idea brought by the Normans. Patriotism means fatherland. Patriarch means father, rule by father. There's the word again, the root, patriotism. And it's necessary, and it's what God wants, because God gives us land. And the covenants of God, of which John spoke a while ago, by the way, are all about land. And the land is all about, as it relates to men, it's all about the law of the land. Our Constitution, Article 6, cites the law of the land, lifting that language from Magna Carta, 1215 AD, Lex Terra. That's what the covenants are all about. Love of country is love of the land, and that means love of the law of the land. It's no accident that office holders and military men in the United States take an oath to the law of the land. What is the law of the land? Article 6 says, this Constitution is the law of our land. And that means it relates to love of country. There's a whole binding up of ideas and concepts there that we leave out. But these are ancient, and it's always been that way, by the way. And to defend our law of the land against domestic enemies is to be willing to serve on the jury and to be willing to sue when you need to be willing to go into the courts. That's what that's all about. And by the way, talking about jurisdiction a while ago, something came to mind. How important it is. Of course, God is the author of jurisdiction. Jurisdiction. Romans 13 uses that word over and over again. It says all, well, the old King James says all power is from God. The French translation even gets that one right. It says all authority. What is authority? It's not power. There's a difference. King James translators had a political agenda there when they put it into power. But it is authority, and authority is jurisdiction. What is jurisdiction? I'll end with this. I said it in a while ago. This one I'll end with. Jurisdiction is the right to act or the duty to act respecting a given matter. Jurisdiction is the duty to act respecting a given matter. All jurisdiction is from God. The Bible says, Romans 13, and then it uses that word over and over again. It means, most fundamentally, I believe the best translation, exousia, is jurisdiction. Matter of fact, I'll say I'm convinced beyond any doubt that's the best translation. Authority is okay, but it would be better if you said jurisdiction. That is more graphic to the point. All jurisdiction is from God. And I know, if I know what jurisdiction God's put me in, I know what jurisdiction I'm in. I don't care what the government says, what the courts say. I may have to try to deal with it. But deep down inside, I know. I know what jurisdiction I'm in, and I want you to know, too. You're in the jurisdiction of the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God. Don't ever forget that. You know what jurisdiction you're in. Admiralty law is a military law. Is there a time for that? Yeah, ships on the high seas and armies in the field at battle. That martial law applies there. And the Bible tells us that very clearly. It's a different law, a different body of rules and regulations. And we should recognize that. But if you're not in that jurisdiction, if you're not mustered as a militiaman of the several states, mustered into duty after getting a duly issued subpoena, well, then you're under the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. But don't forget, too, the martial law, if it's done as God understands it, is still his law. That's an important thing to remember also. To sum up, because war, whether for right or wrong reasons, drains our wealth and our blood, we must wage it only according to the law of the land. The law of the land, by the way, is the law of nature. The way things are. Apparent in the nature of things as we look around us. We must wage war according to law. There is a limit. One, I'll just mention that's been in the news. Torture. Torture is against the law of God, period. And any country that engages in torture is lawless and will pay a price. You can't transgress God's law and expect to get away with it. And Justice Story makes this point in his commentaries on the Constitution. Torture is against the law, at common law. No place in the history of our common law do we ever find torture ever sanctioned. Our common law never has sanctioned it for centuries, and that has distinguished us from the law of the city, from the law of Rome, from the law of Babylon, the Code of Justinian. That's not who we are as Americans. Don't let anybody convince you of that, and never submit to it. Never submit to it. Never allow the government to do it without saying something. Torture is against the law. If you have to kill your enemy, you respect him, because the Bible says respect all men, honor all men at all times, even if you have to go to battle against them. You don't abuse humanity, because to do so is to strike out at the image of God in the other fellow. And to strike out at the image of God in the other fellow, God says, I'm not going to tolerate that kind of abuse. That's striking out at me, says the Creator of all things. So the benefits of the militia provide a check on politicians and those controlling them necessary to discourage unlawful, that is, unlawful, unconstitutional war. War must be constitutional, and the militia is an important part of that. Thanks, John. I look forward to it, and thanks for letting me say a few things.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to move to an open forum. If anybody has any questions, star 6 to ask any questions. If you have a question directed towards Brent, just to make that point towards Brent. Otherwise, we're taking questions because we only got about 25 minutes left. Okay, let's take our first person. Laurie, how you doing? You got the mic. And right now the queue is pretty empty, so star 6 to get into the queue.
Actually, Laurie. John, I was making a comment about the situation with Oregon and Colorado. We have Joe Robertson here in Colorado, so the issue with his meds and all that is going on in Colorado, not Oregon.
Okay.
I was just trying to make a distinction.
Yeah, we thought, he was originally Montana, wasn't he?
He is from Montana, but, you know, he's the one that's been dieseled around.
Right, right. But he was convicted in Montana.
Yes.
And his they claim his crime that he committed was in Montana. What's he doing there with you? Where'd you say you're in?
Colorado. I'm outside of Denver.
What's he doing in Colorado?
he was diesel here. We, you know, they do whatever they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
right. Well,
I
someone needs to make that point that he's not even close to his wife. His wife is in Montana, right?
Right. Right. I just wanted to make that clear. And I will. Is there anything I can write up or?
Well, anything you have firsthand information.
Okay, and I
Joe
don't
told
have
you something. Yeah, if Joe told you something directly, you can write something up.
No,
if his wife told you something, I don't know if you had conversation, but if anybody's had a conversation with his wife and she expresses the fact that she was frightened and she doesn't want to write an affidavit because she's fearful, you know, that would be secondhand information going from her, but you can make that point. But that may be more damaging. She's frightened, so we shouldn't want to include her in any of these things. Mm, we have to get first-hand information from Joe or something we see or something. Okay,
yeah. And the pictures that were being taken of the courthouse, that's in Oregon, the courthouse in Oregon. The issues with Joe are here in Colorado.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All righty, Lori. Okay, Fred from California, it looks like. Is that Fred? Someone looks at VoIP dialer. Who's calling? First
this
name
is California
state.
Fred.
How you doing, Fred, from California? Anybody else who wants to get in the queue? The queue's empty, star 6. Go ahead, Fred.
I've got a question for Mr. Winters. Joe Biden, the running for vice president, keeps calling the president, the chief law enforcement officer of America. I wanted to get Brett's take on that because it seems that that concept defies the sheriff as his chief executive law enforcement officer in his county. I just wanted to get Brett's take on that.
There is no chief law enforcement officer of America. There's a chief law enforcement officer of the general government sitting in Washington, D.C. That's all there's ever been in the presidency, and that's all there ever will be. Of course, the president has such tremendous powers by our Constitution if he enforces the law of the sea, which he should do. He should keep our sea lanes open, and he should enforce the rights and the protection of Americans around the world, and that takes force because if there's a problem with another country, if two countries can't agree on an external standard whereby to govern their relationship, then the only thing that's left to do is leave each other alone or kill each other, go to war. And that's why, by the way, that is why we do go to war when we do, because we can't agree on an external objective standard to govern our relationship. So the president's power domestically ought to be close to nil, nothing. Nada. And him being the chief law enforcement officer of America, that phrase should be struck from the use of anyone in government especially. But Joe Biden, I've been watching him for years. I remember when he ran for president way back 30 years ago or more. He seems to be, man, most of his life, he comes across, I don't know if he's this way in person, but he comes across as just another political silly. He'll just say anything. He doesn't care. He just likes to be popular, smile, and he likes to raise Cain. So he's trying to create a perception that the president has power as the leading law enforcement officer of the United States, or of America. You notice he doesn't use the word United States. He uses the word America. You know, you can watch these fellows. They're very careful with their words and their delusions. For example, maybe some of you heard the other day, when they had that final debate, McDonald accused Hillary of defending or attacking viciously, I'm using his words, viciously attacking the women that Bill Clinton had raped and abused. And in her response, she didn't say that's a lie. She didn't say that's untrue. She said Donald can run his campaign any way he wants. But what he says, what he's just said, is not right. It's not right. That's a different thing than saying it's not a lie, or it is a lie. And so nobody could attack her and that she lied in saying that. And they haven't, I noticed. Nobody's really attacked her over that. But Biden's the same way. When he says that, listen, pardon me for being pontifical at this point. I get upset. But men rule with words. And lying men, false men, rule with words too, and they get away with it. They create the most, the perception they want to create with words. How many young people heard Joe Biden say that? And now they have those words, that phrase in their head, and they'll interpret that to mean. Pardon?
Miss Brent, Mr. Winters? It was not Joe Biden that said that. It was Mike Pence.
I thought you said Joe Biden said it.
Yeah, you did say Joe Biden. So.
I am sorry if I said that. It was Mike Pence who is carrying this message.
Oh, I see. Huh? Well, if that's true, then Pence is wrong. Of course, Pence, he made his way in Indiana as a radio personality. Can we expect him to know much else? I don't know. I don't know much about him except to know that he was on the radio, and that's kind of what got him popular enough to get into politics and do what he's done. But he's creating a perception. Now, whether in his case, I've not been watching him for years. I don't know him that well. I don't know whether he is just loose with words or whether he's doing this by design. I don't know. It's not right. I know that much, and I can say that and know that for sure. No sense speculating about Pence. I don't know.
Okay. Anything else, Fred?
Well, sir, I only brought that up because it disturbed me that they would push that allegation that whoever the commander-in-chief is a chief law enforcement officer, because that plays right into what Hillary wants to do.
You're right,
Fred. They do those things, and they keep repeating things like that, and eventually people believe them. And like Brent was making the point, younger people particularly, they're learning and hearing, and they're believing it, and that's the foundation of their thinking on these things. I mean, just think about how long they've been calling us a democracy. And we're not a democracy. It is true we choose our leaders through democratic process, in most cases anyway, but that doesn't make us a democracy. But go ahead, Brent. Do you want to respond?
Oh, to what these discussions raise a lot of things in my mind that are important.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about voter fraud. Voter fraud. When our country started, people all over the world said there's no way you're going to pull this off in America. You're no way, because you're trying to elect officials for your legislature over such a broad geographic expanse. And, of course, they were just talking about, in those days, the Eastern Seaboard. Well, now we're all over the United States, and I can tell you from personal experience, having run for federal office, how bad voter fraud is and has been for 50 years. My first memories were the 20 ghost boats, some of my first memories, the 20 ghost boats that came out of Cook County, Illinois, that they said got John Kennedy elected to president. Nixon backed off, didn't challenge it. He didn't want to make a constitutional trauma out of it. But now, that seems minuscule compared to what's going on today. And because of that, how important and how wise were the ratifiers of our Constitution that said, we're going to have electors that choose the president? And the conservative and the liberal and the left are trying to talk about how bad that is. Everybody's talking about how bad it is. How Bernie Sanders got pushed out of the election. I don't know the details of that. I don't know the details of really what happened. I wasn't there and not paying that close attention, but I know this. The Electoral College is a good thing, very good thing. And if there is voter fraud, and it is on the massive scale, we're talking millions of false votes, and that wouldn't surprise me knowing what I know and the experiences I've had, the Electoral College may come in handy. I'm anxious to see how that plays out and how useful it becomes.
Well, amen. And we could fix this problem once we take back control. The people can take control and we could fix it. You know, there is a process of counting votes. And, you know, at least the votes, the ballots that get into the box that are counted correctly, you can't defraud the people from the count if done correctly. Now, of course, putting the vote into the box, I mean, that should be easily prevented also. But they don't want to prevent that, obviously, because they want to be able to call the election and control the election. And this is the powers that be. And that's why there is a good chance that, you know, Trump may not make it in because of that. From the other standpoint, I can't see him losing. But You know, he can because of fraud. And, you know, we don't really know for sure that Trump is who he says he is. I do think he is, though. But, you know, proof is in the pudding. And if he does get in, we'll find out, I guess, pretty quickly. Okay, thanks, Fred. We've got a few other people in.
Wait a minute. I have another question that's crucial.
Okay, short, and we'll keep a short
answer. Very short. This is for Mr. Winters and for your follow-up. There is such a thing as a sheriff's parole. Is there such a thing as a marshal's parole? Because the marshals are appointed over districts. And what's happening to this poor guy that's being dieseled around? The marshal service should be able to parole that guy until, no matter what the judge says.
I agree, but you'd be surprised, and I'm surprised still when I think about it, how scared prison guards and U.S. Marshals, I'm talking about federal prison guards, and U.S. Marshals are judges. And here we come back to a simple perception. Here's where we're falling down. People, in general, we don't have a critical mass of folks that just understand fundamental common law government, our Constitution, separation of powers. Why would somebody who works for the executive branch of government, like a prison guard or a U.S. Marshal, be afraid of a judge? Of course, then you go on up the line and say, well, the rest of the marshal service won't protect them, or the prison system won't protect them. All of these things are true, maybe. Maybe that's the problem. But we don't have a sense of the separation of powers. We should. We think of the monolithic government, the government, you know, whatever the government is. No, the government's made up of people, and these people need to each exercise independent judgments. It's appalling, utterly appalling to me. The U.S. Marshals would follow, and prison guards would follow the directions of people above them to do something like this to a man. That's torture. And then knowing they're going to stand before God someday, if not men, for crying out loud, and answer for what they're doing, and they're doing it because they want to have a paycheck. I say they'd be better off living in a cardboard box like the rest of us tried to do, scratch like chickens to make a living all our lives, paying their salaries. And all these police officers following orders of people, telling them to do lawless things, police officers, prison guards, federal marshals, and some people even accuse judges of doing such things. I don't know. I'm not privy to judges. I'm not on the inside of all that. But I do know that if judges are controlled by other people in government, I do know the presidents are controlled. I can see that. Governors, they're afraid of the powers that be. The real powers that be are the bankers. They're the ones that control the government. There are powerful forces behind people like Hillary Clinton, and I can look at the donations that made to her campaign and tell you who those people are. They are the international banks and the Islamic states. That's real easy. She's afraid of them, and they will give her everything she wants to fill her lusts if she will but do their bidding. That's true of many, but it's shocking to me that people who claim to be so blasted patriotic, military men, generals, and lower-ranking officers, everyone, just lay down and do what these sex perverts and weirdos tell them to do. And as I've said before, you get close to people like that and you say to yourself, they're not what they appear to be on television. I wouldn't let my daughters or my dog near such a person. That's what you've got in many cases. It's out of control. That's my comment.
Well,
thank you, Fred. We only got about 7 minutes. We got two other people in the queue.
You
want to make
the
final
marshal
quick comment? Go ahead.
Can't you give the marshals a motion to compel them to do their duty and release this guy?
Oh, you could petition them. But I don't know if it'd do any good or not. You know, it comes down to, are men, are in their minds, are they committed to the laws of nature and the laws of nature of God, or are they not? How do you get men and women that the law is of God is more important to them than anything in the world? Because we as Americans won't survive unless we have a critical mass of those kind of people, a critical mass. That doesn't mean a majority. That means a critical mass. For example, if you have one person on a jury that won't give up and everybody's against him, he's a critical mass. He'll hang the jury. But critical mass is different in each situation, but it's seldom ever a majority.
It would make some difference.
Okay, we're going to move on on this.
Fred. Be in the paperwork, they'd be complicit.
Fred, we're going to move on. We've got like 6 minutes left.
Thanks,
There's
Fred.
Two other people in the queue. We appreciate it. And you can pick this back up next week if you want. You know, one of the key things I think is you know, we could take our lessons from the Lord when they caught this, these individuals caught this woman in the act of adultery that Brent was talking about a little earlier. And what the Lord did was just start writing in the sand. He was bringing light upon the sins of those individuals, you know, who let him who was without sin cast the first stone. And that's the key, I think, in my opinion, is these judges, if there's anything that I've noticed, they don't want anything on the record that's going to put them into some kind of a jeopardy. And that's why what we can do is put things on the record. Now we have a court place, we can put it, and we can, know, can make it stick. And also, we can still plant it in that court. And that in itself puts shakes them up a little bit. So this is how we're going to do it. The marshals are too ignorant. They have to understand the Constitution if they're going to take a position. And that's the problem, is they don't understand the Constitution. Therefore, they have no power. They have no authority within themselves because they have no backbone. They don't have a constitutional backbone. Okay, with that, we'll take our next question. Jeremiah from California. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I wrote down some notes from earlier, so I'm just going to try to speed through them, okay? It's the end of the call. Thank you for opening my mic, by the way, and hello to everyone. Secretary of State issues basically regulations, and legislature enacts statutes. And so the reason why that's important is because the regulations usually will be able to determine whether or not they're constitutional or not. There was someone on the call that mentioned that they needed help with medical, some sort of possible wrongful death action, someone in prison. And I would like to let them know that they can contact me to talk to me about it if they're interested. 415-286-2412. My name is Jeremiah. And then I have some ideas for how you may be able to get some help right now, and it involves habeas corpus. Okay, two questions for you. Habeas corpus, extrinsic circumstances regarding health, wouldn't that be a good remedy for the imprisonment case? And the second thing is, without sworn statements, you have no court case. I need you to explain that for me. So maybe one thing at a time. Maybe just one question. How about this? How about the habeas corpus and the extrinsic circumstances?
Well, you know, I'd like to respond to that is that, you know, we've already did a habeas corpus for Mr. Robinson, and they've ignored that. They didn't put it on the file, and they didn't send it back, and numerous people were involved. It became a conspiracy in the fact that they ignored it collectively. You know, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't want to do another one. We could and would, but I think there's some more things we could do. I think a habeas corpus isn't in order. I think a mandamus is more in order from we the people, and to put these sins on the record, and to require, as a matter of fact, if we get the sworn affidavits, we can require them to answer them through our court case here, because we're now going after a conspiracy. We're going after those who are subverting the Constitution, subverting we the people, subverting the United States of America, you know, and we're going to bring them into our court case. And once we give them a summons, and they have to answer, they have a duty to answer. They have to answer by law. And by what authority they think that they're acting and doing these things? And how is it that they can interpret the law in a way that it can't be interpreted? They're privately interpreting the law to mean whatever it is that they want. So that's the way we could deal with it. But a habeas corpus, yeah, we could do that also. That's a possibility.
Right.
We're not
that's another thing. We have to return. I think we need to try to return to the habeas corpus within this respect because of this emergency. But with regard to
one of the things you see, time is a problem here, and we're planning to do that. We've got some, I don't remember, 30 or so habeas corpuses out there. We've only had two that were successful out of all the ones that we have filed, and that in itself proves a conspiracy because, you see, they've ignored them. And they didn't just ignore them out of one federal district. They ignored them out of 30 different federal districts, okay? We intend on bringing that into the court as proof of conspiracy within the judiciary.
That's fine, but that's a broad issue. John, I'm sorry, that's a broad issue. And what I want to try to address is the medical issue of the imprisoned man who needs attention. And I was thinking a habeas corpus would be file another one. That it needs to bring him forward.
We probably will. It sounds logical to go that route. I think we're going to do more than
That is your affidavit, is what I'm saying. You want an affidavit? That habeas corpus will be your affidavit. Go ahead.
No, no, that's not how it works. Look at, first of all, in order to go forward with a habeas corpus, it has to be requested, okay? Someone has to request that habeas corpus, usually the individual in jail. Since the person in jail can't do it, next friend can do it. Hold on.
Uh-huh.
We could go forward with his wife, but his wife is too frightened. But there is some other people. So we can do a habeas corpus through the rules of the federal court.
Well, who are you going to sue, is my question, with the habeas?
Oh, we go directly after. Well, the habeas corpus is requiring certain individuals to do certain things, and if they don't do those certain things, those are indictable.
It's going to be the Commissioner of Corrections of that jurisdiction. Commissioner of Corrections of that jurisdiction is who you attack, or the supervisor of the prison.
You may be right. I don't even know what you're even talking about on that. I'm not aware of that kind of a position and what you're talking about. But
that's why I want you guys to contact me about habeas.
You go after the sinner, okay? It's the individual who's violating the law, you know? That's where it begins. But as far as the authority and the requirements of the individual, that position that you had mentioned, I don't know. Maybe they're supposed to be paying attention to things. I don't know how they would have been alerted of the habeas corpus that we did. I mean, are they watching and reading everything? I don't know. We never copied an individual like that. But we
here's
follow
the question.
The process.
Did you sue somebody when you did your habeas? Who were you suing? Because habeas is a civil action. Habeas is a civil action, and in it you sue somebody. That's the truth.
Habeas corpus is a demand of due process. Habeas corpus is a statutory requirement.
But it's a private civil action.
It's already in our Constitution. We have an unalienable right of due process. We have the right for people to step up, make a sworn statement on the record, and say, I saw you do this, that, and the other thing, and I'm swearing. That is what's required. And if that doesn't happen, then they have to release the individual.
Right.
And that is the problem. And
okay, let me clarify something.
They never do.
If you don't mind, let me clarify something. That in a habeas corpus proceeding, when due process or any rights are being denied, right, the person being sued has to be the person who's causing harm. And the only one that's doing that is the person in charge of the facility where the prisoner is being maintained at.
Yeah, that may have some validity to that, what you're saying, but the bottom line is that the judge that is creating the situation or the process that keeps this person in jail without due process, in other words, there is no sworn affidavit or there is no proof or anything that allows the court, no authority, nothing that gives that court the authority to incarcerate that man. And that's what habeas corpus is produce the evidence. If you can't produce the evidence, release the prisoner. Now, it is true that whoever's in charge of the prisons, the order goes out, that they should release it. But the federal chief judge who we put in charge of this thing won't put that order out and won't do it and won't say it. We have put that order out from the perspective of the court, from the grand jury's perspective, as being the court at this point, because right now we don't have a common law court unless the grand jury runs that court. And that's why we're going to be titling the court case, the grand jury against, you know, versus or against, actually not versus, the grand jury against, and then we're going to name, of course, the two branches of government, and of course we're going to include the executive by including the governors, but not the executive here as far as the United States at this point as being the president. But with that, I want to move to the last person.
That's pretty broad. I appreciate you taking my call. Thanks.
We could talk. Get on earlier next time. We'll talk.
Yo, call me, man. You got my number now. All right.
Okay. Thanks. Bye. Okay, Mary, you're our last caller. Go right ahead. Massachusetts, Mary.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. I had a question about this whole voter fraud situation. I wasn't sure. I know that in my state, I had checked with my state election board, and I talked with actually their legal counsel, and that we have paper ballots here. But what is all this craziness about, like, 16 states have voter machines that are owned by George Soros' company?
And
well,
that's
first of all, the whole thing falls apart once they use a machine to count the votes. Look, there is a process and a procedure of vote counting, and it's all laid out on how it's to be done. And maybe, you know, if someone brings this question up a little earlier in the evening, maybe next week or another time, we'll get into the details on how the vote is supposed to
okay.
be counted. And so all of this is fraud. They want to move to the machines because the machines are easy. It's electronics. It's easy to take it
right.
over and make whoever you want, whoever you want, whatever
okay.
they want. So
I think they
problem.
Count
so
it in Spain,
do they have any recourse? Do they
huh?
have any recourse? Do you have any recourse? Is there any recourse for that? Can you ask for a paper ballot? Can you? Do you have the right
no,
to
no,
do
no.
that?
We can. When we get into power and authority, we can require the process. We can require it. Look, votes are supposed to be counted in public, okay? There's a process for this, which we will get to.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually go into the, you know, they've deleted and erased a lot of this stuff here in New York, right? Here in the New York law, when we were studying this in the law, old law books, when they changed a lot of things back around 1913 or 1916, somewhere around there. What was the date, Gerard? Do you remember? They made the major changes. In any event,
right.
they changed.
It was in 1913, but went back to the 1911 book with the pages
right.
ripped out.
Right, we got the older books, and they got the details on how to count the vote. Everything's laid out. There is a procedure, and it's a procedure that you can't cheat at. It cannot be cheated, and this is what needs to be done. We need to go back to that. There's no real. Oh, there's so many people. We got to count. No, that's BS. That's baloney because we have election districts, and election districts have a certain amount of growth. They can only get so big before they create another election district.
Right.
So you only have to count
volunteer.
The votes in each
yeah.
one of the election districts, done in the public. It's very simple, and then certified. And the way they certify this and the processes and the number of witnesses involved in front of the public and how the votes are even touched and moved and everything is accounted for. Who carries the box, where it's moved to, how it's placed, everything is accounted for. So anyway,
okay.
in the near
we
future,
in,
we will...
We can get into it later. It's pretty obvious that they're just trying to steal the election.
They're really
pushing.
The whole thing. They've set
oh,
this whole thing
God.
Up so that they can steal it.
They're
even
tampering with the mail. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, they don't stop.
All right. Thanks, John. Well, thanks, Gerard.
All right.
Have
thank
a good
you,
night.
Mary. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Brent, for coming
good
to speak with us. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, thanks everyone for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next weekend. We're going to end the program for right now. And again, please, we got a lot of work to do. We do need money, so whatever you can afford, if people can send in some donations, we'd appreciate it. If you're not donating on a monthly basis, please consider it. The work that we're trying to do and get done, $5 a month or more. $5 is not a lot of money to ask for. Everyone can afford, most everyone can afford $5. So please consider that. Okay. We'll see you next Monday, Lord willing.
Son of man that you visit.